favorite podcast, whatever podcast would you listen to? I am Andrew, head janitor of the NLSC. I'm joined by tools guy extraordinaire Leftos.
That was so nice. You had the intro all prepared and stuff. I'm not going to ruin it for you. Hello.
And we are also joined by former patcher and all-around good guy, Ben. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing well, thanks, Andrew. G'day, Leftos. How are you doing, mate?
Fine. Besides, you know, I somehow managed to pull a muscle in my back last Friday.
Not your ACL. You didn't tear your ACL.
No. It wasn't my ACL.
How unfashionable. No, you injured your back. It's the knee that you're supposed to
win. I didn't want to miss the season, man.
I guess.
I'm going for an Andre Drummond. I'm just going to go away just enough so that you miss me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And come back and win an award and make the all-rookie team.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to make the all-rookie team. I don't know of what sport, but some rookie team is going to have me.
Let's make up a sport.
What do I like? I like bowls. No, that went wrong already.
We're off to our trademark flying start here on the SC podcast.
Okay, so now I have myself recorded as saying I like bowls.
Someone's going to set that as their ringtone, like their personalized ringtone for you now.
Yeah. Just me, auto-tuned to I like bowls. And then I guess Sir Mix-a-Lot. You know,
big butts and I cannot lie.
Yeah. Oh, hey mom, I like bowls.
Yeah.
What about that? Look at your son all grown up, loving bowls. I love bowls, all kinds of bowls, round ones, the egg ones that American football has. Yeah. Do you like bowls? Do you like bowls? I'm going to be a great dad one day. I'm going to teach my child to love bowls.
We're really earning that explicit rating, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, if we're going to keep it, we should have a reason to have it.
You can't ruin your street. Once you get your street cred, you know, you got to maintain it. So.
Yeah.
Hello, we iTunes.
We can go breaking Kevin Smith's records for a fax in a 1.5-hour feature. So, after what film was it? Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, I think, which, you know, he said that I'm just going to break the Godfather's record and just get all the fucks I can in there.
Yeah, I think Big Lebowski also is up there as well, I think.
Yeah. Is there a list in Wikipedia? I'm actually going to look it up. Number of fucks in a feature.
Yeah.
Number of fucks in a feature.
List of movies with most profanity or something like that.
List of films that most frequently use the word fuck. Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia. How you like that? There's actually an article.
Citation.
crap. Fuck, a documentary on the word actually
doesn't count,
has
really.
Word.
Times. Have you guys seen that? That is a great exploration of the word and profanity in general.
I think I've seen that, although I'm not sure. I'm only saying I think I've seen it because it says it was made in 2005.
Yeah.
And I think I've watched. I could have watched the 2005 one, at least much more recently. Oh, so yeah, you were right. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back has 248 times. Big Lebowski is 260. Pulp Fiction is 265.
Pulp Fiction.
I'm looking for a movie.
South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut. I'm guessing that's got to be up there. Probably for animated feature, I'm guessing.
Zack and Miri Make a Porno is up there, 219. Hot Tub Time Machine, 212. 8 Mile, 200.
Not too many surprises on that list.
Get Rich or Die Trying, wasn't that the 50 Cent movie?
Yeah.
185. Like it, yeah. There goes all 50 Cent's street cred. He couldn't even surpass Eminem. the Blair Witch Project. The Blair Witch Project actually has the word fuck 154 times. I don't remember fuck being in there in Blair Witch Project all that much.
Are they counting like, the people in the audience saying, what the fuck was this? I mean...
Yeah, yes. Maybe they counted all the fucks in the theater.
The amount of people walking out.
Yeah, just during the initial screening or something.
Yeah.
It was an interesting movie, I guess. You know, Blair Witch Project. But, you know, it wasn't as bad as the other film that was made a few years ago that used the same concept, you know, completely recorded from a single camera as a big thing happened. What was it? A catastrophe? A monster? Or whatever?
Cloverfield?
I know.
Is it Cloverfield?
Yeah, Cloverfield, sorry.
J.J. Abrams one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the definition of a terrible movie.
Actually, it was...
What?
Well,
what,
it was better than Green Lantern.
Yeah. There's not much stuff that's worse... You know, than Green Lantern, and it's too bad because I love Ryan Reynolds. I love Ryan Reynolds. Maybe I have balls in my mouth. Slip of the tongue there. My tongue slip. No, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. That's going to be bad for anyone.
That's too far.
Yeah, that's too far. But yeah, I love Ryan Reynolds, and I've seen him, you know, in a couple of things that I really like him in. One of my favorite movies is Paper Man, where it's Jeff Daniels, not the Dumb and Dumber version of Jeff Daniels, the newsroom version of Jeff Daniels.
Yep.
And Mila Kunis, not Mila Kunis, Emma Stone, Lisa Kudrow, and Ryan Reynolds. And that's a great film. Jeff Daniels is a writer with writer's block, and they decide with Lisa Kudrow to move to a house out in the country for a while so that he can... because apparently the writer's block is also affecting their marriage. And it's the whole... Ryan Reynolds is actually the fantastic friend of... the imaginary friend of Jeff Daniels, and he's in this... during the whole movie, he's in this ridiculous Superman-like costume, you know, as Jeff Daniels imagines him.
Are you sure you're not talking about Green Lantern now? Or
Drop Dead Fred?
Green Lantern means Drop Dead Fred. Terrible.
It's actually a very good movie. It's actually a very good movie. And Ryan Reynolds, if anything, you know, I love his, my English has completely given up on me today. I haven't woken up at all. It's, his, how he delivers his lines in comedies, you know, whatever, his synchronization and the way he delivers, you know, a line after another actor is just amazing to me.
As Calculon would put it, unholy acting talent.
Yeah. I just love seeing him in comedies. I don't know about, you know, more serious films. What was the single camera, single view film, Buried, that Ryan Reynolds was in? Have you seen that one?
No, not familiar with that one.
People either loved or hated that film. It's just Ryan Reynolds as an American soldier that got buried alive and it's the whole film is 1 hour and a half of Ryan Reynolds being inside a coffin, buried alive, trying to either get away or contact friends, and the whole, you know, everything that goes through his mind, his whole psychology during the thing of being buried alive, for, you know, realizing it, trying to get help, almost giving up, and it's a really nice film. You know, it came out so close to, what was it, 127 hours?
Oh yeah,
the film with James Franco that got stuck. between those rocks, and those
three.
No, arm.
Oh, it was an arm.
But those films were so similar in concept, and they came out so close together that it was almost, you know, deliberate. You know, James Franco going up against Ryan Reynolds, and apparently everybody loved 127 Hours more, but I still think Buried is a good film, and it was a nice... It's really risky, you know, to take up a role where you'll have to have the whole movie on your shoulders. You're acting... Just your acting, because the scenery ain't going to change, even when you're stuck in a rock or stuck in a coffin. The scenery ain't going to change, so your acting and the direction is the only thing that's going to make or break the movie. So I thought it was a very bold move for a young actor to actually, you know, try to take a whole movie up on his shoulders. So that's one of the reasons I recommend for that. Any movies you guys remember fondly?
Well, Van Wilder is probably the one that comes to mind for me. National Lampoon's Van Wilder that he was in 2001,
2001. I'm not saying Ryan Reynolds movies. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, any movies that come to mind. Whenever I talk about movies, for example, my mind goes straight to Green Mile.
Yes.
One of my favorite movies, and I was really saddened to learn that, you know, Michael Clarke Duncan passed away. I just love the guy and everything he played. Most of his roles were mostly, you know, ridiculous comedic roles, because I guess his size gives him that advantage in being easily ridiculous. But, you know, him playing as John Coffey in Green Mile was an amazing casting choice, and you know, an amazing performance in that film. Any movies, you know, that come to your mind when you're asked, you know, what's your favorite movie? What's the first movie that comes to your mind?
Well, you mentioned Tom Hanks, obviously, Green Mile, which makes me think of Tom Hanks. One of my favorites to this day, actually, it's almost 20 years old now, but is Forrest Gump. I really like that film. And I know not everyone did. It was kind of panned at the time. I mean, a lot of people did love it, but it certainly wasn't universally loved. But I've, you know, based on the book by Winston Groom, I think it is. I'm pulling that off the top of my head, so I could be wrong. But just the way, you know, they inserted him into history. And for the time, 1994, sort of putting him in, digitally putting him in all the old footage and, you know, matching up the handshake with JFK. Quite impressive for the time. You know?
Exactly that. I mean, even they try stuff like that, you know, in modern films, and they can't get it down as well as Forrest Gump did it in 1994.
Yeah. on top of being just a very funny and touching movie, all in it. So,
they have Jennifer Connelly in it.
Did it?
I think it. Who wasn't it? Jennifer Connelly who played the.
I played Jen A. That was Robin Wright Penn. I'm pretty sure.
I'm going to look it up. I'm going to just out of curiosity. Ben, were you trying to say something?
Yeah. For me, one of the movies would be Heat, the one with Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Natalie Portman, Val Kilmer, Ashley Judd. And a shitload of other cast members. Yeah, that for me was a good action movie in 95. You know, it was a good movie in with the relationship between Al Pacino and Robert De Niro with their characters and that, how they're on opposite sides of the law, but they, I suppose, you know, form a respectful mutual friendship and that.
A lot of acting chops between those two guys to be able to carry a movie, for sure.
Yep.
I was completely mistaken. Robin Wright actually played Jenny in Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
And I have no idea who Robin Wright is, actually, to be honest.
Well,
known for Santa Barbara, Beowulf, Moneyball, and Unbreakable. Yeah.
She is okay. or was married to Sean Penn at one point.
Ah.
That's why. Okay. She was Robin Wright Penn, or being credited as Robin Wright Penn at one point or the other. So.
Ah, okay. Okay. But, you know, you mentioned, Ben mentioned Robert De Niro. Have you guys seen Silver Linings Playbook?
Not yet.
That came out in 2012?
I haven't seen it yet. It's just come out in cinemas here, though.
Okay.
It's a little bit slow to release here, from the sound, because I knew it.
I know. Most of the time when films come to Greece, most of the time there has already been a DVD release in the US. So. kind of moots the point, you know. You don't want pirated copies of your film to come out before the movie is on theaters.
Yeah.
You know? You're just begging to, you know, to not have people come and see the film. Movie theaters are in enough trouble already, considering, you know, a lot of people tend to not have the money anymore to have a nice night out at the movies, you know, especially considering how expensive everything else is. Even if you just get the ticket, if you decide to get, you know, popcorn or, you know, nachos or whatever, the prices are still ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's nothing compared to an NBA stadium, actually. I have a story about that. But, you know, you don't want, you know, pirated drips of the DVDs and Blu-rays coming out before the movie has been shown, at least in most countries worldwide.
Yeah, we're seeing
the same thing.
We're seeing the same thing with television here in Australia. It used to be that they'd get, you know, let's say any given American sitcom or drama would come over months after the US. So, of course, as broadband has become more commonplace, people downloading or streaming the episodes online, you know, nobody really wants to hang around for 4 or 5 months to get the latest episodes. So we actually are seeing it now where a lot of shows are only 1 or 2 weeks behind the US, which is much better, obviously, because once again, I mean, if you're going to be delivering it 6 months later, it's kind of like the whole newspaper thing. I mean, yes, they say...
Yesterday's news, yeah.
Yeah, yesterday's news today. So it's kind of like, it's nice that they've actually made the effort to do it. But it is a bit ridiculous when it finally hits cinemas or something long after the DVD is out, or people have already pirated online. And the only way to counteract that is to up the game and get this stuff out earlier. And we see that a lot with games as well. You know, having to wait. And of course, we all know about that in our community with the Steam version of NBA 2K13 coming out 2 weeks and then push back yet another 2 weeks and coming out a month after the...
I guess that worked great for 2K and, you know, PC sales.
Yeah.
That's what's actually worrying us, because, you know, 2K could use its own fuck-up to justify not getting a PC version next year.
Well, we are still waiting for the PC patch.
The supposed patch is, you know, there's compared to other years, I have to say there hasn't been much confirmation.
Yeah.
At all, you know. They've said it is coming after all the console patches are released, but it doesn't seem the consoles are getting any more patches.
Well, we do. I'd actually had a look at Ronnie's Twitter, and since we have somewhat segued into NBA 2K13 stuff, we should mention that it's been a very quiet week for news. But we were talking about it before the podcast, and you put it best, Leftos, that it's, you know, the very definition of a quiet week this past week. But I am looking at Ronnie 2K's Twitter, and in response to a couple of issues with My Career, the contract extension in My Career that causes a crash, I believe, and also some My Player closet issues, you know, that which is, well, that's just intolerable, really. But he mentions that they are aware of those issues and they would need a patch, no news on that. So it's remains to be seen whether the consoles are going to get fixes for those problems, and if they are still going to receive fixes. And the PC.
I know when that patch is coming.
Next year?
October 2013.
Yeah, NBA 2K14. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. But if assuming that there is at least one more update for the consoles, and who knows when we're getting the PC patch, if at all.
Soon would be better than nothing.
I mean, we've mentioned before that we've been enjoying the game as is, but it would be nice to get these fixes at some point. We are still paying customers after all, and as we've also noted before, they've only gone to one digital distributor this year, so there's in theory not going to be the problem pushing through those updates. So
I was the one making that assumption that since they've only went with one digital distributor, they're actually looking to do something similar to what EA is doing. EA is only on Origin, and except yesterday, actually EA teamed up with Ubisoft, so EA's games are also going to be on Uplay. Ubisoft's downloadable games platform. there was the funniest comment ever in the Ars Technica article that announced that. I'm just going to bring it up. One of the funniest comments I've ever read out of one Ars Technica reader saying he quoted the title that says EA Ubisoft agreed to share downloadable libraries, and user Jeffrey Jeff D. Commented, that's like reading The Plague and Cholera will join forces to make the world a happier place. referencing to all Ubisoft's CRM trouble and EA and everything. Every reason, you know, people love EA for things that have happened over the years. Not so much in sports as in other franchises and smaller studios being bought out and stuff like that. But so I guess, you know, but going with a single distributor allows you much greater ease as far as, you know, having to only release two binaries. 2K would only need to release the DVD binary and maybe with the difference of the US and international versions and stuff like that, maybe, you know, three or four versions, but
much less compared.
I guess console patches must be the same way. You know, even console versions, I guess, go by region. But they have to just release the Steam version. But as far as DRM goes, you only have two different versions. It's not like, you know, the international version of NBA 2K13 has a different DRM scheme than the US version. But, you know, that allows, you know, that's exactly what allows EA to have the PC patch before the console patches come out.
Oh, with FIFA? You know?
Yeah, I guess EA, you know, just verifies itself. So, you know, it doesn't have to wait for anyone to verify their patches as far as the PC goes, and then they have to wait for Microsoft and Sony to verify their console patches. But again, even on Steam, when you see, you know, games like Magicka, I've brought this example up, you know, in one of the early podcasts, Magicka actually had a patch a week.
Yeah.
It actually received 20 patches during the first 20 weeks, if not even in a smaller time frame, because the developers were constantly working, and Steam and Valve didn't put any, you know, big restrictions on them on releasing patches. The verification process is really fast on Steam, so you'd think that 2K going with just Steam would be able to just apply the same changes to NBA 2K, but
who knows?
I guess they're not looking to accidentally introduce one of the features they removed by, you know, applying the same code that they've applying the same changes that they applied to consoles, applying them on the PC. Maybe will unlock something they've locked down. So who knows what the reason is? Go ahead.
So can't let us have the closet, you know, us evil PC users. I mean,
yeah.
So once again, we are left, you know.
You'd have to think what exploits would come up if they gave us the closet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine the horrors of exploits that would come up
Once again, we are left keeping our fingers crossed and such. I did tweet them, because sometimes we do get responses from Chris Manning, LD2K at least, is usually pretty good about getting us. So basically, I guess what we'd say to everyone listening would be to keep tweeting at them, because eventually they do have to answer somebody, and they usually spit out. Well, if they get enough,
you have to show them. I guess they do have the numbers, but we have to show them there's still a market for them.
Yeah, if they keep at it, just saying, yeah. You know, where is the patch? Can you give us some more information, please? Don't need to rip into them, you know. We may grumble about it, but, you know, just act like adults. You know, be civil about it. You know, when is
actually. Actually, I think we're going to have much more of their attention if Vlad manages to get Redditor out by mid-March, which is... he hasn't set any time frames, but he has mentioned the closed beta is coming. So if I would have to hazard a guess, you know, don't take my word for it. I'm just putting a guess out. I would hope that Redditor will be out by mid-March, so then, you know, the stuff that gets out every year after Redditor is released always gets TK's attention, whether they want it or not. They were retweeting, as we've said a number of times, they were retweeting videos that were that could be made only because Ultimate Base Roster existed, you know? So maybe that will get their attention.
And we've talked maybe before that, about what Redditor will mean for the modding community, and just to give everyone the weekly update, we now have over 600 files for NBA 2K13 in our database.
Imagine what will happen when Redditor comes out.
Yeah, we've got about 780, getting close to 800 now for 2K12. Still, with some people still releasing.
We're definitely getting past 2K12's numbers.
We were
lucky because we've mentioned that it was easy to actually port assets over, you know, convert assets from 2K12 to 2K13. So a lot of, you know, last year's patchers actually are converting their work, and that's why we have a much faster pipeline this year in getting patches for 2K13, which was great. And but do you think, you know, I want to love TK for the work it's put on the game and for giving me a game I actually love, but do you think TK is intentionally being a dick about the PC version, you know, trying to actually push people away from it into the console market, and that's why they're doing stuff like that?
Don't think actively. I don't think it's actively doing it, but they're certainly... not treating it as a priority. I mean, if they could avoid having to deal with the PC version, they'd probably like it, I'm guessing, since they haven't really... I mean, we've talked about it before. For many years, EA would sort of very quietly help us with modding, with patching, not necessarily with advice or anything, but certainly allowing releasing the game with file formats that could be opened, like the databases for the rosters can be opened with Microsoft Excel if you've got nothing else. There are other programs to use that we can. The file formats didn't change so much that we couldn't work them out and make the conversions year to year. In fact, the file formats for 07 and 08 are pretty much identical, to the point you can just use an 08 and 07 update with the other game. Not the rosters, but the artwork is unchanged. Which, of course, indicates they were slowing down on that generation of games. They weren't really developing the art for that at point, because the PC version was ported from PlayStation 2. But nevertheless, we did have that option. And, of course, the custom art folders and everything, where we could just place files and the game would load them instead of the default. So we certainly got some help very quietly with that. But the fact that they haven't gone out of their way to help us with that and sort of don't answer that many queries about the PC version. And yeah, I mean, I can see where you're coming from with that, but I don't think it's active. I think it's just indifference more than a sort of an intentional plan.
You know, it's just, boy, I'd love to agree with you.
Possibly the same result, of course.
Yeah, I'd love to agree with you on that, but I have my doubts, because when you're developing a game and you remove so many features, you're bound to break stuff. Yes. So they were actively disabling things and actively making sure that disabling those things wouldn't break the game completely. Because when you disable, you know, certain aspects of my player and my career, you have to make sure that there's no exploits that are going to give the player access to those features.
Yeah.
And then, so you have to go actually through a lot of trouble to, you know, disable that stuff, except if, you know, you're actually, you complete development on the PC and then add things to the 360 and PS3 versions. So I have no idea how that went in 2K's offices, but you know, at least here's hoping that whatever happens, we still get a new version. You know, even if it's cut down, we've talked about this. I don't mind that much any of the stuff that's missing from this year's version. You know, it is much cheaper as well. We've discussed whether we'd prefer a full $60 version or the cut down $20 version, and we've all said our opinions on it. But you know, I just want to have a PC version, even if it's just a core game. You know, the game modes, the assets and stuff like that. I don't care about the My Player Closet. I don't care that much about my team. Just give me, you know, the core game, and I would still pay, you know, the $20-$25 for it. Okay. And you know, already there are great offers around. I think I saw, you know, a $12 version on Greenman Gaming. Some user reported that offer. So you know, there's a lot of offers going around for the PC version, and it gets really cheap, really fast. And you know, with Redditor coming out and the possibility of patches that could come out this year as well, you know, I'm only thinking that we're going to see more stuff, more people come over to the PC version again once the big patches, you know, the big mods come out. It takes some time, but you know, the modding possibilities are endless, and that always, you know, persuades people to try the PC version at least.
Once again, everybody, pester 2K, I guess. When is the PC patch coming? Show your support for the PC version, and yeah, just sort of give them a little bit of a nudge that we want that. They're not really talking about it at the moment. Obviously, they haven't answered any questions recently. Looking back through his recent feed, hasn't answered any questions about the PC version. What they are talking about is I'm guessing we guys don't have a whole lot to say about this, but it's news, so I'll note it anyway, is they're releasing an NBA 2K13 and MLB 2K13 combo pack. So obviously trying to, with the late announcement of MLB 2K13, I'm guessing trying to get some more sales by packaging it with an established franchise that remains quite popular. That is only for the console versions. I believe the MLB 2K13 is only 360 and PS3. I don't think it's coming out on PC, if my memory serves me correctly. That's about all I've got to say about that one. March 5th it comes out, so if you happen to love baseball as well and like what they do with that series and you haven't picked up 2K13, then there's a chance to pick up too cheaply, apparently. And they've got a trailer if you really want to check it out, but that's what's happening with MLB 2K13. As I understand, they haven't really even promoted that much at all, so
That's one administrator sounding exciting about some news he has to present.
Well, that's about as excited as one can get about that news. I've already got the game for the PC version, so if people want to check it out, there's a trailer they can take a look. I didn't bother running the news on the main page. It's probably more interesting for people who want to get MLB. I'm guessing most people in our community who are going to get 2K13 have already got it, but if not, you want to get two games for the price of one or whatever it is, yeah, check it out. But any other thoughts on that, guys, or shall we move on to our wonderful predictions for the All-Star game?
No. I just wanted to mention something. I said I had a story earlier back when we were discussing movies.
Yeah.
And we completely got sidetracked. And I've said previously that I got to watch an NBA basketball game. I was in San Francisco during a field trip with the university, and we went to see the season-ending game between the Warriors and the Trailblazers back in the 10-11 season. And if you think movie theaters are ridiculous, you haven't went to an NBA game, because besides being forced to even give up any water bottles you have at the entrance for security reasons, obviously you're forced that if you get hungry or thirsty during the game, you're forced to the all the stores and vendors that are around the arena, inside the arena. You know, there's the actual arena, and around it is a corridor, a big corridor around the stadium, inside it that has all the vendors. You know, stores and food vendors and drink vendors and stuff like that. And the prices are, you know, I'm going to try to be, you know, lenient, but they are ridiculous.
Yeah.
I remember a hot dog going for $9, a bottle of water, a half-liter bottle of water going for $5. So just a hot dog. And the water, and just a hot dog and two waters would cost you as much as we paid for the actual ticket.
Yeah.
The ticket was $20 or $25 for the upper area, and no seat guaranteed. It's the supposed, you know, standing tickets, but
up in the nosebleeds.
You get no guarantee about a seat, but if you find one, nobody's going to force you off it.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's the actual, you know, person that has a ticket to that seat. If you find an empty seat, you can still sit down. So it's a good deal. And, you know, except in, I guess, you know, really popular games. But the season-ending game that didn't have anything to decide for either the Warriors or the Trailblazers, there were enough seats to sit down on. So... But it was $20 to $25 to get one a ticket for that, and you know, just a hot dog and two waters would cost as much as the ticket itself.
Yeah, they'll get you one way or the other.
Yeah, the prices were utterly, utterly ridiculous. You know, and it's the same franchise that if you visit the same franchise right outside the stadium, it has its regular prices. You know. $2 for a hot dog, and then when you enter the stadium, suddenly it's $9.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's stuff like that. That's going to
any kind of venue, any kind of event, you see that a lot, I think. It's, I mean, it's commercialism, it's capitalism, I suppose, and, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, that and of course, some people are paying a lot more for a ticket. And, I suppose, I figure if you're going to spend, you know, $100 on really good seats.
You have the money to pay for a hot dog as well. Yeah,
it's a little silly.
I guess. Yeah, I guess stuff like that happen. And there's always packs and you know, offers, special offers from teams. I get the regular, you know, Pistons newsletter, and as long as you're signed up to the newsletter, you can get two tickets and two beers for $50 in specific games, so which is a good deal as well.
Yeah, because family feed kind of pack, maybe something.
Yeah, and family packs and stuff like that. So word to the wise, either get to the game full, or make sure to grab a special offer.
Yeah.
Because you're not... if you don't have money to burn, you don't want to spend your money there. That's pretty much all I have on that.
The pricing that you're talking about, we get the same here with some of our sporting events and that, like our rugby league, union, cricket, and all that, where it's ridiculous, but... When I was in London, I went to Harrods, and they have like an ice cream parlor in a sense. And I paid £27.50, so about $42, $43 Australian for a banana split.
Yeah. Wow.
$42 for a banana split and a chocolate truffle thick shake or milkshake.
Was it the best dessert you've ever had? I mean, for that
it wasn't bad, but I wouldn't pay that much again. It was just like a one-off thing. It was like,
yeah,
it was purely just an indulgent thing. But realistically, no way I'd pay that much for it anywhere. I mean, considering I remember going to Universal Studios and getting a massive ice cream cone that I don't know, it was like the biggest cone I've had, and that. And I think from memory it was like $5, $5.50 US, or even paying was it about $44 Australian for a 1.75-liter bottle of Jim Beam when I was in New Zealand. It's like, yeah, just trying to compare it with those, so in comparison. But because I was getting paid good money and because it was on this trip and that, it was like, yeah, purely a one-off chance, but I'll never do it again, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and moving on to our All-Star predictions, or I guess our All-Star failures, because did we get anything right except the West winning the All-Star game? Did we get... No, I think
no, we didn't. I think we got everything wrong.
Yeah.
Except for that, yeah. We... Well, one thing, it really looked like our prediction of Team Westbrook was going to do well in the Shooting Stars, then they completely choked.
Great.
So, you know... That's,
solid bet advice from the NLSC podcast, everyone.
That's on them, you know. They, you know...
If you hear us giving you investment advice, definitely follow.
Tune in, Yes, it's a very good thing we didn't have money riding on any of our predictions, because we were very wide of the mark. Before we I think we basically covered the results of our predictions. We got the West winning. That was it. And we can go through some of the events later. I do have some comments here from the forums.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The celebrity game, which we were all very excited about. DC 311, speaking of Kevin Hart. Hart gets on my damn nerves a lot more nowadays. And, yeah, he was pretty annoying. I don't know if you guys... I did watch it. There were some entertaining moments. Seeing Usain Bolt dunk very effortlessly was kind of fun. So, and there was it's a bit of fun. Running clock, not
the bit where Hart challenged Usain Bolt
to the race. Yeah, and then
that was just cheesy. I mean, was that supposed to be funny? I guess, and him cheating and starting earlier.
Jumping the gun,
I don't. I. Maybe he was funny once, but now he seems like he's trying too hard.
I think that's the perfect way of putting it. Yeah, it's that kind of comedy does get old very quickly. I mean, I can appreciate all different kinds of comedy, but when you're just trying too hard to be funny every single moment and just so over the top, it stops being funny. Because everything's trying to be a funny moment, so there's no breath, there's no straight man to play off. So, please turn it down, Kevin Hart. I mean, I admire his enthusiasm and everything, and he's got some charisma and such. He's certainly enthusiastic about the celebrity game and such, but yeah, turn it down. That would be my advice as a devotee of comedy. Just tone it down a notch.
I prefer him on his like stage shows and that when he's actually performing his comedy acts and that more than the sort of
impromptu.
You know, less sort of in your face sort of
shtick.
Style and
it's
that.
More,
yeah,
more just a stand up routine, funny observations and such. Yeah, I haven't actually seen any of his regular performances. I've only seen him, so I guess it sounds like I haven't been exposed to the best of Mr. Hart there.
Some of his comedy acts and that when he's on stage are pretty freaking hilarious and just too much in your face stuff gets the annoying factor in that, so it can tarnish his career a bit if he does it too much and all that, so hopefully next year it won't be so much in your face.
As he goes for the three-peat on the MVP.
Yeah.
Speaking of going for the MVP, I've got another comment here on the Rising Stars game from Stereo Oxide. It says, "Wow, Chuck's team hitting threes from everywhere," which they absolutely were in the first half of that game. It was amazing.
Yeah, what the hell happened there? Nobody could predict that Chuck's team would win.
No.
On paper, and everyone was saying it, even on the broadcast, you know, he didn't even show up down at when they were meeting at half court before the game. Shaq showed up, and Chris Webber was there with a big Charles Barkley face on a stick, and talking about, you know, everyone said on the paper Shaq's team has it better. We all said that before the on our previous podcast, and then they just came out and they were just bombing away from 3-point range, and that game was over after the first half.
You know what Team Shaq did? They pulled the Lakers.
Yeah.
So many great people on there, so many great rising stars, actually, and they still managed to lose to Team Shaq.
Yeah.
And not just lose by a little bit.
Yeah. They got destroyed. But I guess, you know, destroyed gets a different meaning. You know, in All-Star games, you tend to see games, as we've mentioned, you tend to see games be either really close or complete blowouts.
Yeah.
Because you're not going, if you know you're going to lose, you're not going to play defense anymore. You're not going to risk getting an injury during the All-Star weekend.
Yeah.
I guess that once it becomes even, you know, the least bit clear that you're going to lose, most people give up.
It wasn't a bad game despite that. I thought there were some highlights. I like seeing the young guys trying something crazy with the dunks and whatnot. Towards the end, of course, last couple of minutes, they pretty much just stood back and had an impromptu dunk contest. That's fine. Game was in the books. It sounds weird to say, but it was kind of more competitive than the score indicates, in so much as both teams were playing hard, but the Team Chuck were just hitting all those threes in the first half and built that lead very quickly. And Team Shaq did sort of try to make a bit of a run in the second half, but it was just a bit too much to overcome. Yeah. But no, I enjoyed it, and Kenneth Faried put on a bit of a show, which was good. He got the MVP. Isaiah Thomas looked like he was going to get the MVP in the first half with his performance, all the assists and all the threes, but Faried with his 40 points and handful of rebounds and such definitely became the standout performer. And yeah, I mean, I like Faried. I also thought he had the best dunk of the dunk contest, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Any other thoughts on the Rising Stars game?
Have they found Brandon Knight's ankles yet? Like, or the remaining pieces?
Oh, of course. How could we forget Kyrie Irving with that? That crossover. That was.
It looked like he stood on a freaking landmine. His ankles just explode.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a fan of Brandon Knight either way, so ahead, make all the fun you want.
We're not trying to stay up, it was just observational, sort of, trying to be observational.
He did get immediately, that reminded me, actually, you know, watching that highlight, I actually went back and watched the vidcast that, the successful one, at least the first one, that John and I did. Back when near when the game was released, and you know how he did the sell off the glass alley-oop with Kevin Garnett, and then immediately I go the other way with Brandon Knight and hit a three. That's pretty much the same thing that happened. Kyrie Irving beats Brandon Knight's ankles. Brandon Knight falls to the ground and then immediately hits an off the glass three in Kyrie Irving's face. So, you know, it's really. It's really nice to see them again go up against each other. Brandon Knight didn't lose his ankles, at least, you know, back in the Cavaliers versus Pistons meetings. But it's always been a fun between those two players. As much as I don't really feel that excited about Brandon Knight. It's always the Cavaliers versus Pistons games are always interesting because of that matchup. Those two always seem to go up against each other. They seem to have it in for each other and always make for entertaining games. And again, it was a funny moment seeing Brandon Knight just collapse on the ground. But then, you know, goes straight back to just hit the three in Irving's face. So. Stuff like that, you know, just prove your point, Andrew, about the game being really competitive and nice. You know, even though the score wouldn't have you know that if you just looked at the score.
There were entertaining moments, and that's pretty much all you can ask for in a game like that, especially when it turns into the blowout.
Yeah.
But you know, Brandon Knight didn't do too bad in the skills challenge.
Actually, if it wasn't for the East versus West rule, he would have actually progressed to the next round.
Yeah, and that's actually
full of surprises. That fucking All-Star weekend was full of surprises.
Yeah.
Team Chuck wins. Yeah. Brandon Knight actually proves to have skills for whatever reason. What the hell happened? But I guess Lillard deserved that one. He was he had. What was it, below 30 seconds?
Yeah, it was like 28.4 or 28.9.
That amazing performances, really.
Yeah, and so I know Tony Parker had the best time last year of 29 seconds, and so that's why I think we all picked him being the star of the contest and the defending champ, but he, it seemed like his mind was elsewhere because he just didn't perform well at all in the contest.
He was already thinking after party.
Cut specific the instructions by Greg Popovich. You know, maybe we'll see another fine on the Spurs for Parker's performance in the skills challenge.
Actually, the other thing that just mentioning it reminded me of players not playing so much. I was actually surprised to see Irving play so much in the Rising Stars game, and I was quite pleased to see actually. I mean, that weekend was kind of a bit of a coming out party for him. I mean, he was already established as quite a player and a rising star in the league. But I mean, he's with his performance in the game and such. He's, I think he's certainly.
I'm with you. I was the one that was saying over and over again that I'm not expecting much time out of Kyrie Irving, considering he's in the All-Star game as well.
Yeah,
and then he was also in the 3-point contest. Yeah,
which he won, and which I guess is next up on the ticket here. I'm just looking to see if we have any comments. DC311, only event he enjoyed, and Kyrie did his thing and not expected. I don't think anyone really expected him to do it. He's a decent 3-point shooter and a pretty good 3-point shooter, but certainly wasn't our pick, Stephen Curry, just missed out, actually. He got 17 and 18 was the cutoff. And that brings up another point that I wanted to broach here. Because they did the East versus West approach this year throughout All-Star Saturday night, Ryan Anderson actually had 18 in the first round to match Irving. And if it was the same as in years past, it would have been either being the three of them in the finals or a shootout between the two. So the format kind of robs players who potentially get the best score.
Just to get both conferences, you know, represented, but it doesn't match the best three-pointers up. Neither did, you know, match the best players in the skills challenge. At least, you know, as far as, you know, the rules of the challenge go. I'm not saying that the Knight should be there in the finals or whatever, he could have been just, you know, in that specific challenge. And again, in the 3-point contest, it's nice to have both conferences, represented. I guess, you know, both fans from both conferences can enjoy the game. But when it all is said and done, don't you think that people would have rather seen the best 3-point shooters go up against each other?
Yeah,
I guess if a conference proves to be really sucky one year, imagine having, you know, the best, you know, imagine the East having 18 level scorers, and then the West having the best 3-point shooter having a 15.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, imagine that, and then you end up having a final that's not going to be of interest to anyone.
We saw that in the Shooting Stars as well. Team Bosch, who actually won the whole thing, they at first I wondered why they're in the finals, and I remembered East versus West. They had the third worst time in the first round. Both West teams had really good times in the first round of the Shooting Stars. But then, of course, Team Westbrook gets through the finals. They choke. Fair enough, they choke away the victory. But Team Bosch, who sort of squeaked through the first round with this terrible time simply because of the East versus West format. And I guess this also highlights the whole playoffs as well. You know, a lot of people say East versus West there doesn't make sense. I think it makes a bit more sense there in the playoffs than
two definitely more sense than the All-Star game.
But I like the concept of East versus West throughout the weekend, but I think they do need to tweak it a bit, because certainly I think a few players got screwed over by the format this year. And that's
how would you tweak it though?
You could still have the whoever from the East and West wins still earns points for their conference, but you don't need to make a bracket. Instead of having a bracket, you have everyone compete individually, but if a player from the East wins, East gets the points, for example.
Ah, okay, so a conference is determined the winner after all the events are... Ah, okay, that makes sense.
So you could still have, for example, if two West players make it through to the finals, the West is going to get points anyway, but we're still going to make sure that the two best shooters, based on the first round scores, get to compete for their individual accomplishment, the actual trophy. That's what I mean. So do away with the brackets, but still say, okay, whether it's East and West. You can even still have three from the East and three from the West. Just allow the top two or three scores, whether they want to do two advance or three advance.
Yeah. Have the requirement as far as, who gets to participate.
Yeah.
But don't force second rounds to be from both the conferences.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Make sure both conferences are represented as far as the participants go, but if the best players prove to be from one conference, have them go up against each other.
That's how I do it.
Or else you're just begging for a blowout to happen. Yeah. If your picks prove to be bad from a certain conference, or if a certain conference ends up choking all in the same day, you're just begging for a blowout to happen, the second rounds ending up sucking.
Well, we saw that in the dunk contest, but before we move on, Kyrie Irving's performance, the 23 points in the last round, I thought he was going to break Craig Hodges' record. I know that's a former Bull, but I wanted to see it happen, just because you don't get to see that kind of history made very often. A lot of players have come close over the years, 23, 24, still a very respectable score, don't get me wrong, but I was like, oh, so close, just a couple of... I think his legs went on him a little bit in the final round there, and I was hoping to see history made, basically, but still a very impressive performance by Mr. Irving there.
Yeah. Dunk contest. What do you think? I think the all-around... Yeah. Yeah. That
disappointing.
That pretty much sums it up. Yeah, the all around, the opinion that seems to go around is that it was disappointing, maybe underwhelming.
Is it fair to say that our pick, Mr. James White, flat out sucked? Is that too harsh to say?
He choked. He has done it before.
Definitely choked that second round. But even his first dunk, he brought out the flight attendants, and I kind of thought, it's a bit cheesy. But then it took him a couple of attempts to do it, and then he did the two-hander from a step and a half or two steps inside the free throw line, which Vince Carter did back in 2000, two-handed from about that distance. And he got the 48, or was it 47, 48, something like
47.
That.
47.
47. I was like, I guess it's a decent, fair enough score. I thought the judging in the first round for the West was terrible.
No, he got 45.
Okay, that's a bit more reasonable, but even so. But that he did that, and that was, I'm like, okay, well, that's not his best, and then he couldn't even get a dunk to go in the second. Yeah, that was disappointing. And Joel Green, I thought his first dunk was nice, but not a 50. I was surprised to see that get a perfect score. Basically just a reverse off a lob. We've seen it before, and we've actually seen better. And then they gave Kenneth Faried 39 for a 360 off the backboard. I know he didn't get it down all that clean, but I still thought that was very low, considering what they'd given the other participants. But yeah, underwhelming seems to be the best word to describe this year's contest.
I'm glad that Jeremy Evans didn't win. Like, for me, Terrence Ross was the better dunker out of the two. Like, he had a bit more flair to it. Jeremy Evans dunks are just too much all the same. But
jumping out of someone.
Yeah, and a very minimal sort of effort of a windmill and all that stuff. So he lacked a lot of creativity for it. It was just prop crap. And if he was to jump over a person like he attempted, they shouldn't have been sitting down. you know, sitting down just makes it a weak, half-assed effort. I mean, at least the kid was standing up. Well, I mean, he slightly bent over a little bit, like he was trying to take it. But yeah, it was. Yeah, so, you know, that added a more level of difficulty to it. So, yeah.
Ross was definitely the most consistent dunker, I'd say, throughout the contest, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say. Evans, I will pay the dunk over the painting. I mean, the fact that he kind of basically did the same dunk that he'd painted, that, you know, I'll applaud the creativity, but, yeah, I'm glad that that wasn't the dunk of the night. The dunk of the night, I thought, was Kenneth Freed going off the backboard between the legs. A lot of power on that, and that's it's only been done a couple of times before, so that was my dunk of the night.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad dunk for him. Like, but considering he's pretty tall and lanky, you know, that's a lot of control in that. And
yeah,
body control to sort of get body in position. And he didn't really take many steps. It was pretty much like off like two, maybe three steps, so to be able to do that. So, yeah. It wasn't like a half-court run-up kind of thing, so yeah, it added to the difficulty.
And I was, again, based on my predictions, I was surprised to see Farid win it. I knew he had the force. I didn't think he would have the creativity to actually win the contest.
Who's that, sorry?
Farid. I was saying, you know, the last week that I like his how forceful he is on his dunks, but I didn't see him as having the creativity required, to win a contest. But I wouldn't say so much that Farid won as much as that everybody else lost.
Oh, he didn't win. Ross won.
Ah, yeah, Terence Ross. Again, I wouldn't say Terence Ross was, again, he was good enough.
Yeah,
but
I'd
then
agree.
You didn't see anything that impressive as far as competition goes.
Agreed.
You know,
agreed.
People were expecting much more stuff, much more impressive stuff from Green and White. And the comment I was saying, and I wanted to ask your opinion on that, was. Was NBA too late to bring Green and White into the dunk contest?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're past their dunking prime, and that had we had them, you know, a few years back,
Joel Green is a former champion, so, and he did do something. He was pretty impressive in the previous one. I think the cupcake dunk's a bit overrated, but then I'm not a big props. Not a big fan of the props. I do have to give this year's contest credit. Apart from Jeremy Evans' efforts, they did actually keep props and gimmicks to a minimum. A lot of it was attempting tricks with the ball, so I was pleased to see that, but I just don't think they brought it. They didn't bring enough there. And I know there's stuff that can be done, because we've seen it in other dunk contests in college or with the Team Flight Brothers or what have you. So we know that it can be done, and the athletes are there in the NBA, whether Gerald Green and James White are perhaps getting a little bit beyond being able to do that. Who knows what James White was saving? I mean, what he was attempting to do on his second dunk looked pretty cool. But
I think it was the windmill from the free throw line, wasn't it? That he was attempting his second one,
and he kept losing the grip on the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. What's with the double dunk by
Gerald Green? Yeah.
Yeah. What was with that?
That was a lot of build-up to nothing.
Yeah. I thought he was going to go for, like, the elbow hang sort of thing, like Vince Carter did in that, but it wasn't
that. And
then, that.
You know, and then Terence Ross makes the dunk that he just throws the ball up, catches it, dunks it. You know, it does kind of a, it's not a 360, I would say it's a 180 or something like that, because he's already turned before he's got the ball. He's facing away from the basket, and then he's facing to the basket, so it's not even a 270, it's a 180.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not saying that, no, again, Terence Ross might have won, but it's pretty much that everyone else lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you might have made the remark. I saw you talking about the contest afterwards on Facebook, Ben, about Jeremy Evans. You were glad that Jeremy Evans didn't sort of trip over the line to win the contest this year.
And that's, like we did last year.
And Terrence Ross, instead Terrence Ross kind of did, although I wouldn't. He did a little bit better than Tripp, but he certainly lumbered, shall we say, across the finish line, perhaps. with some nice dunks, you know, that, and that's, I guess, you see that from the contest. A couple of them were nice, but and even the format, which I'm not a fan of, didn't work out too badly. I think it was just, it reminded me a little of the 2010 contest where the creativity just wasn't there. And I still rank that contest. Yeah?
Should they have had a third round dunk in the first round just to sort of an opportunity to make up for if they fucked up in a sense?
I think that'd be a good idea. I think if you want to do three in the first round, two in the finals, that'd be fine. Five dunks for the whoever gets through the finals does the five dunks. So if you don't have five spectacular dunks in your arsenal, then really shouldn't be in the dunk contest. So yeah. Here's a comment from Jeff X. Says, I hate sounding like an old man, which is funny because Jeff X is one of our oldest members. and we love Jeff X. Very loyal Knicks fan, but he says, I hate sounding like an old man, but maybe it's time to scrap this. We've already seen the best, Dr. J, Jordan, Neek, Webb, Vince. I'm bored watching this now, and I don't remember the Cats from the past needing do-overs. Well, sometimes they did, but certainly not as often. Our very own P-Dub pointed out that a lot of the dunks they're trying these days are trying to raise the bar, so it stands to reason that they do have to have a few more do-overs, though perhaps not the Chris Anderson levels.
They need to have more practice. They don't need more do-overs.
Yeah, I suppose so. But
You're not supposed to get 10 tries during the actual dunk contest.
Yeah, I don't think anyone... Well, back in the day, you had one... you could replace one dunk per round or one dunk per something. So, I mean, occasionally people had to do it, so they didn't have...
I don't remember which year it was, but if you missed the dunk twice, that was it, no matter what the clock said.
Yeah, before they had the timed routine.
They were forced to practice, you know, before the dunk contest. You're not supposed to try 10 times and then, if you get it right, have everyone applaud you.
Yeah.
It's the dunk contest.
Come prepared.
Just like you don't want to go to see your favorite band and have them sound check for the first 2 hours and then play one good song at the end and say goodnight.
Yeah.
You're paying to see them perform. So I guess, you know, if you get... Maybe they should announce the dunk contest participants a bit earlier to give them some more time to, you know, prepare or make the All-Star break a bit longer. You know, give the players the non-participants more of a rest or a chance to practice, and then give the participants some more time to honor their craft and, you know, practice and have the contest be as impressive, the whole weekend be as impressive as possible. I do something, but I don't agree with giving the players more do-overs.
Yeah,
agreed.
Getting back to Jeff X's other point, would you say it's time to scrap the contest?
No, definitely not. I still think there's creativity and, you know, more stuff that you can do. It just takes the right player to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It's and I said this in the forum and I said this in my Friday Five a couple of weeks ago. Some years the contest is better than others. And from 2000 to 2009, most of the contests, there was some controversy in the judging and whatever, but most of the contests were pretty good. 2010 came, it was lame. 2011 came with Blake Griffin. It was pretty good, you know, and which brought out the usual all the dunk contesters back rhetoric after the scrap the dunk contest rhetoric. Last year, not so good. This year, not so good. But what if next year it's... Well, Kenny Smith went on record to say that this was going to be a top 10 dunk contest, and by the end of the night,
he was retracting that. Yeah.
Shaq called him out on it. Actually, that reminds me of my favorite part of the Gerald Green double dunk, about the most entertaining part of watching him miss all and basically dunk once and not do what he wanted to do. was Charles Barkley and Shaq basically calling each other fat ass. just having them bicker on commentary was more entertaining than watching him fail over and over again. But yeah. And Shaq called Kenny out on that by the end of the night, and Kenny did go back on it. But, you know, maybe next year it will be a top 10 contest if you get the right plays, if the format's good, if the creativity is there. So, yeah, yeah. I say that. I understand where he's coming from. We have seen a lot before. The last couple of contests haven't been spectacular. The format, I'm sure, is turning a lot of people away, as I've gone on and on about so many times. But it's still entertaining enough. It was underwhelming this year, but the potential of the contest is there. You know, I'd rather have it there than two ball. That was Cheryl Miller. Forget the dunk contest. Two ball is here to stay. No, it wasn't, because nobody wants to see Karl Malone standing out on the 3-point line bombing away while the WNBA player rebounds. Nobody needed to see that. We saw it for 3 years. That was enough. I'll take a lame dunk contest over two ball any day of the week.
And I really don't care, you know, you've brought up judging, and I guess judging is required to get some people off to the second round, but I really don't care about the grades. I really don't care about who wins it. I just want to see impressive dunks during the dunk contest.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind, even if the whole thing is set up, and even if the... even if people can vote before the dunks are pulled off, I really don't care about it. I watch the dunk contest for the dunks themselves, and I guess it matters more to the actual players and the actual fans of the players who wins. And if, you know, yeah. I guess if Drummond was in 1 year, maybe I would be more passionate about who won. But again, it's picking the right players for the job. It's giving them enough time to practice, and it's disallowing the actual dunk contest to become a practice itself that is going to force the players to actually make sure they can pull off the dunks before they enter the contest. If you give the player the freedom to pull off the same dunk 10 times before, you know, it counts, they're going to get complacent.
Yeah.
They're going to say, okay, maybe if I don't need to practice it that much. Okay, I got it down once, I got it down twice. Maybe if I fail once or twice during a contest, it doesn't matter. No, it does matter. It does matter. Even if the rules allow you to give the same dunk a go 10 times, you shouldn't be requiring 10 times to pull off the dunk during the dunk contest. You're not JaVale McGee.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, that's my opinion of the contest.
My thoughts of why this one was potentially a letdown is because we had the expectations. We know what Gerald Green and James White are capable of, and the fact that they didn't deliver. I think that was the huge sort of the whole disappointing factor of it. And I reckon if they use a similar format next year, but maybe include like that third round, like we mentioned, in the first, like a third dunk in the first round. If it doesn't work, I don't know. Should the pros go up against the streetballers? So like Team Flight Brothers and all that stuff. Should they force a hand?
I'd love to see it.
Say,
I'd love to see it. It's going to be embarrassing for the NBA players, the judge on basing on recent performances. But I'd love to see it.
You don't want that happening during the All-Star weekend, though. It's supposed to be for NBA players.
Yeah, but again, so if they're going to be slack and lazy about it, maybe it's time. This is be their wake-up call and sort of look. Your ass can get embarrassed, or you can go out there and show them why you deserve those multi-million-dollar contracts.
You know what could work? Having a preliminary closed-door contest. So, you know, players could sign up for it freely, have one day where every player will have to show off a dunk against to a committee behind closed doors, and then decide which players get in the dunk contest. I don't know how the players are picked right now, but I'm guessing, you know, they can say whether they want to participate or not, and then someone picks them out of their performances in the year.
Say... Yeah, I'd like. Yeah. I've got some creative stuff. I'd like to give it a shot.
Yeah, but season.
I think Westbrook was putting his hand up for this year, and he didn't get in.
Well,
yeah, but again, dunks during games do not necessarily translate well to the actual dunk contest.
Well, Shannon Brown's a good example of that. And again, that was 2010, the whole let Shannon dunk situation. And once again, as Ben alluded to, we have expectations, and then it comes to the contest, and when it falls far short, it certainly adds disappointment on top of everything else. So that's definitely, I think, a factor here. But do you guys think we do need more stars in the contest? I mean, we've had some good contests in the past where, I mean, not every great dunk contest has featured a star winning. I mean, Kenny Skywalker in 1989 had some pretty nice dunks. Harold Miner, of course, only spent 4 years in the league and pretty much the only...
Isaiah Ryder, you know, he wasn't really a star. I mean,
well, he had a bit more of a bit of time. But yeah, Harold Miner had 4 years in the league and two dunk contest wins, so that was pretty much all he did. So, I mean, it doesn't... Do you think we do need the stars to really make the
Not really. I don't really care about the stars.
As long as you got the ability and talent, fucking bring it.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason why I mentioned they should have a closed doors preliminary round. You know, where every player that has applied for the dunk contest can show off a couple of dunks, and you know, just pick the best six out of them that can actually pull off dunk contest like dunks.
Yeah,
you know,
should they do something like I think it had been done where people were interested in. Players who are interested in going in it, they sort of did audition, like put little tapes, like preview of what could happen.
If you don't have enough time to get them between games to actually, you know, have a preliminary round, even that, you know, have
and
them
then
practice
people
their,
choose, yeah, and then have them online and say, yeah, the top six go through. Like if it's yeah, so that could be one way. Instead of having it behind closed doors, you know, people get the say. So then in the end, we become accountable for picking a dud to participate.
That's actually not a bad idea. I like that idea. You know, given having players put up mixtapes of the dunk contest like dunks and showing off their skills. Before the contest, you know, there's a lot of ways where you can make it better. But again, what my most major point in this is that I don't want to have players practicing during the contest. I want to give them as few tries as possible and give them some more time before the All-Star break. Make the break between the dunk contest and the last game. Before the All-Star weekend, give them a few more days, a couple of days more, so that they can, you know, practice or take some time off and have the weekend be as impressive as possible. I understand why they don't want to have too many days of a break, because you don't want people, you know, forgetting about the NBA. You know, you want them to be there, to have something to tune to every night, so the All-Star break has to be as small as possible. But again, you know, if you're going to have such disappointing contests, you have to do something about it.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe program some all-time classic programming during the All-Star break. You know, have some of the best games played to give people reasons to stay tuned to the NBA, and maybe, you know, show off some older All-Star weekends or whatever, but you need to find a way.
Or have a Legends All-Star game, like some of the older Legends who are still able to run, you know, maybe they could have a game and all that stuff. So that...
They used to do that, actually. They had the Legends Classic, which was originally what they had before the Rising Stars, or the rookie games that used to be. They phased it out because a lot of the guys... it kind of tarnished the memories in some cases, but also a lot of the guys were getting injured. So a lot of the older guys were getting injured, so I'm guessing it's going to be tough to get that. And I'm guessing we're probably not going to see the Larry Birds and the Michael Jordans out there playing again, so probably... They throw the word legend around very easily to refer to anyone anyone who's a former NBA player these days.
I played five games, and then I tore my ACL.
Well,
but I became a legend, damn it.
In NBA Jam on Fire Edition, Brian Reeves is in there as a legend for the Grizzlies. So, so you know, the bar is not always set very high for these. So we'd want to set it a bit higher if we're going to bring that back. We'll leave the dunk contest discussion with a quote from Shadowgrin, which perhaps really sums up what we've just been talking about. He says, "For a moment there, it looked like the dunk contest, Chris Anderson edition." And yes, that that's a good way of summing up all the attempts. We talked about getting stars in the dunk contest. May or may not be a good idea. We certainly wouldn't discourage them, but not necessary. Where we do want to see the best of the best, though, is in the All-Star game itself, All-Star Sunday. I watched the game live. Did you guys? I know, Leftos, you. It was a bit late for you.
Late, is putting it mildly. The game started 5 a.m. local time, so I only got highlights of it later on.
Yeah, I watched it live. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, actually, before I go on there, I just to finish up the All-Star Saturday night. A discussion, actually. I did throw it out there on our Facebook page and Twitter whether to respond whether you liked or disliked the All-Star Saturday Night proceedings. Most of the people on Facebook responded that they did enjoy All-Star Saturday Night for whatever it was. My my final grade would be, underwhelming, but, well, it's better than Green Lantern, I suppose, better than Twilight. That's the we can throw that out there, I suppose. Facebook, Twitter, it was more even, about 50-50 of people that did retweeted whether they did enjoy it or didn't enjoy it. It was about 50-50. What would you guys say? Would you give it a letter grade? Would you just say underwhelming? Did you enjoy any of All-Star Saturday Night? Or, I mean, on the whole? C-.
Yeah, it's a little bit flat. I think the whole dunk contest thing just it really flattened it for me. Yeah. It just sour note.
Well, then moving on to the All-Star game. Once again, after that was over, I asked the same question on Facebook and Twitter, and once again, Facebook mostly positive. Twitter was about 50-50. Some of the comments in the forum. Didn't seem to really enjoy the All-Star game. I thought it was good. I thought it was pretty competitive all the way through. There was a couple of times when the West jumped out to a 10-point lead, and it they looked like they might run away with it, but the East came back, and there was quite a lot of lead changes for an All-Star game. You don't usually see that many the lead change hands that many times. Not a lot of defense played, but, you know, that's the way it goes. A bit more defense when it was tight down the stretch. We saw a bit more real basketball, shall we say. But, you know, there were highlights. It was competitive. I mean, you can't really ask for much more of an All-Star game. I thought it was good. You know, I'd definitely give that the thumbs up. All-Star Saturday Night, underwhelming. But I thought it finished on a good note with the All-Star game.
I did too. I thought the West were going to win by at least double digits, but for them to only win by 5, I was pretty happy with the East efforts with that. They really didn't have the strongest team, but you know, I think it made up a little bit more for the sort of sour ending Saturday. Yeah, so yeah, I think it was a good game. It wasn't completely all just sort of laid back sort of thing like it had been in the past. You know, it did have some competition to it, so that was good to see.
Yeah, I'm reading and from the highlights I saw Kobe and LeBron were a good matchup.
Yeah.
And you know, considering the rest of the All-Star weekend, the players would have to not show up at all for the game for anything to be worse than how the All-Star weekend had went. You know, anything was an improvement. You know, having all the stars in one game and have it be as competitive as it was definitely an improvement over anything else. So even if it wasn't a great All-Star game, the rest of the weekend really helped lead up to, you know, to the All-Star game being a good way to close it.
Yeah, the bar wasn't set very high. the bar.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, that's exactly what I was trying to say, but I used five sentences for it.
Yeah.
One thing about the game, like, I saw ESPN's rankings for player rankings and that for the All-Star game, and, you know, it goes through individually for East and West, and I know, I was kind of disappointed by some of the ratings. Like, they gave Wade a B-, but they gave Dwight Howard a C+. For me, that's just fucking ridiculous. Like, Wade played an awesome game. You know, the 21 points and, was it 6 or 7 assists and stuff?
Yeah.
And then a few rebounds. You know, he was up there. He was probably the, like, top two for the East, I think. In performance wise, you know, Melo was strong. I think it would have been between LeBron. Him.
Yeah.
Yeah, LeBron had a good one too. But, you know, to give freaking Dwight Howard a C plus,
yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is the 2K Insider is also now working for the rankings on ESPN, are you?
it's just absolutely freaking terrible ratings. Who else? Zach Randolph a C+, David Lee a C, Harden a B, Kobe a B, Chris Bosh a C+, even despite being
all the air balls.
Yeah,
the multiple air balls.
Yeah, and the nutmegs.
Yeah,
Lopez a D+, and yeah, I don't know. The ratings don't match up. What I thought.
You know what? Brook Lopez got a rebound in an All-Star game. I'm giving him an A. Maybe even an A+. because he can't do that when... he can't really do that when in just a regular game. So for him to actually get a rebound or two in an All-Star game...
Oh, come on. Come on.
I know.
You're being too mean.
Yeah. Well, I've been very nice, you know, already to the rest of the game, so... But yeah, it does. I certainly think. I mean, you know, that's just one person's opinion, I suppose. And ESPN is not always the most impartial judges of these things. And so, but yeah, no, that's. I wouldn't agree with those rankings at all.
Yeah. Anyway,
did anyone catch Reggie Miller's comments just after the Craig Sager Dwight Howard interview? Like on. When Dwight was on the bench and that, just after hitting the three.
No.
He goes...
Was it about wanting him to do more, the Lakers? Wanting him to do more? Was that one?
Basically saying the Lakers deserve better than Dwight Howard. That's basically the play out.
Yeah. That was very blunt. And he's got a point.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to give credit to Dwight Howard. He is playing banged up, and I think people have perhaps... not giving enough credit. He came back very early from back surgery. So, that, I mean, it's to be expected that he wasn't, that he's not 100%, but yeah, and we'll get to this in a little bit because obviously a lot of trade rumors surrounding Dwight Howard, but yeah, I think Reggie made a fair call, blunt as it was.
Yeah. And he did seem so disinterested in being there. The whole event, even... basically more decision he has been playing for the Lakers as well as his last season in Orlando.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you wonder whether he's pondering considering his next
$100 million contract. And considering how charismatic he's been in previous years, it's a huge 180 for him in a sense in that. So in his behavior and attitude in that, so well. Maybe not so much behavior.
That's true.
Definitely his attitude.
He's got that very clownish persona. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A sort of life of the party kind of character. So it was very interesting. His interview with Craig Sager, was very very subdued and not and I guess the disappointing season he's having despite going to the Lakers surrounded by all these other stars. It's certainly not turned out the way he wants, so I guess there's a lot of dissatisfaction there in Lakerland at the moment, so I guess that's it's all part of that, but it definitely is a marked change from the Dwight Howard that usually clowns around. Certainly no stickers being slapped on the backboard.
no dancing with Kevin Hart or Shaq.
No, nothing of that nature this time around. But even without him, it was an entertaining game. So, yeah, if people didn't like it, they're obviously entitled to their opinion, and we can debate this back and forth. But yeah, for my money, that was a good All-Star game. You know, it wrapped up the weekend quite nicely.
Okay, so should we move on to the upcoming NBA trade deadline?
Yes, which is just a couple of days away, or probably less than 48 hours now. So have you guys been checking out any of the rumors? I've got a few of them up in front of me at the moment.
Yeah. The three main players that I'm seeing having rumors around them are Kevin Garnett, Josh Smith, and Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
The three centerpieces of the trade deadline. Yeah, the biggest names. There's also you know, other smaller trade propositions going, you know, in the background. But the main guys that are getting the most publicity in the trade mill are those three. And supposedly Kevin Garnett was at least really close to going to the Clippers, but for no apparent reason the talks have broken down, and Chris Paul is rumored to be really excited about having Kevin Garnett on the team, and for all the talk that has been happening that Chris Paul has the final word on the Clippers organization. I don't know how that came up. Do you guys have any idea how that came up? I guess there must have been something I missed, because suddenly everybody was talking about how Chris Paul is the most the biggest factor in the Clippers organization, and that everything goes to him.
Well, we should also note before, he is the All-Star MVP as well. He had a great performance in that game, which we somehow skimmed over in talking about Dwight Howard and his C+. but he is the MVP of the Clippers as well. Quite frankly, he's really taken to the team. He's apparently keen to re-sign. I mean, that was the big thing. Oh, he's gone to the Clippers, but being the Clippers, it's all going to fall apart in a couple of years. Apparently not. Apparently, he is going to, or is very more than open to re-signing, shall we say? So clearly, they're taking his input very seriously. And, I mean, we talked before about how the NBA is a fraternity. So if he wants to recruit someone like Kevin Garnett, then obviously the Clippers are going to listen to him, pushing for it. I'm guessing that the talks fell apart because of KG's no-trade clause. I'm guessing that's really what...
Yeah, he'd have to approve the deal.
I'm guessing that he's just stuck to his guns. Because I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but I'm talking about bleeding green and really... being passionate about a Celtic, which I admire, you know, especially enough times. We saw it in Minnesota as well. He didn't really demand a trade or anything until it really went down, and they actually sort of approached him and said, look, we're going to blow up the team. You know, would you be open to moving? So he's a very, very loyal guy, Kevin Garnett. I don't like all of his antics that he does with some of the cheap stuff, but he actually has been one of my favorite non-Bulls for many years. Pretty much since he came into the league. So I'm guessing he just wants to remain a Celtic, and the deal's fallen apart because he said, look, you know, I don't want to go anywhere. So I'm guessing that's what's going on.
And Garnett was quoted saying that this is going to be his last All-Star game. So, and everyone, nobody translated that as, I'm never going to be good enough for an All-Star game. Everybody is now thinking that he's really close to retirement, so it would make sense to... Maybe he doesn't feel the Clippers have enough to actually win him a championship, so he feels he should. He would rather stay loyal to the Celtics and retire with them. Yeah. You know, retire a loyal Celtic, and it makes sense. I mean, the Clippers have a great team; they're third in the Western Conference. But if he doesn't feel he has the no trade clause, it all goes through him in order for a deal to happen. So if he doesn't feel that the Clippers are going to win him something that's more worth to him than his loyalty to the Celtics, you know, more power to him
He does have a championship already, so I'm sure while he'd love to add another one to his collection, perhaps the pressure...
Yeah, but the Celtics, nobody's saying that the Celtics are a contender this year.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're going to the Clippers to try and win another championship, I mean, I'm guessing he's content to... with his career and content to retire a Celtic.
Yeah.
Perhaps if he had a championship, maybe he'd feel like chasing okay, one in the ring. Last. Yeah.
Maybe again he's afraid that moving to a new team and be so close to the end of his career, maybe he doesn't want to embarrass himself, you know?
Yeah.
It could turn out that he can't work in the Clipper system, and you don't want your last year to be a terrible one.
Yeah.
He's set in his ways. Yeah, he's set in his ways.
Yeah.
No, I can respect maybe, point of view. I can respect that point of view, so...
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how excited the Clippers fans would be about the prospect of Garnett joining them. He is a great player, but he's so close to the end of his career. So would you trade two of your young upcoming pieces, even if they're not as great as Garnett, would you trade two of them? What's the trade going for? I think it's Bledsoe and Jordan. Yeah. Would you trade both Bledsoe and Jordan for for a couple of years out of Kevin Garnett? Yeah, I think it's better that the trade doesn't happen.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I might have. You wouldn't
get the investment. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I probably would have. He had a bit more in the tank and whatnot, so it would have made more sense then. Maybe last year or the year before. Or they didn't get Paul till last year, did they? Anyway, a couple of years ago, it would have been a much better deal, but yeah, I don't think the Clippers would have been that much better off. Maybe that's selling him a bit short, but again, like you said, you've got to adjust to the new team and obviously getting to the end of his career. So yeah, that one looks like it's dead in the water, which also seems to be the case with Dwight Howard. I mean, there's rumors continue to swirl. The Lakers say they're not trading him, and a lot of rival GMs are saying that the Lakers, because they are the Lakers, can afford to be arrogant enough to say, oh, yes, we'll re-sign him. He's not going anywhere. We can offer him the most money. We're the Lakers. He's going to stick with us.
Do they want that?
Well,
do they actually want that? Because the reports say that the Lakers have reassured Howard that he isn't going anywhere, but that they are actually pitching trade deals to other teams for him. So... do you think the Howard experiment is close to being over so early?
I think there's a possibility, as long as they obviously going to get the right replacement in that for him, and I think they're going to be totally desperate just to dump him for the sake of it. Like, the chemistry is not working between him and Kobe, and if the reports are, like, even during the before the game, and that Dwight apparently threw on Kobe's uniform and tried imitating Kobe and that in front of everyone and sort of berating him and all that. So I don't know. I think
that would have gone down well.
Apparently, when Kobe entered the locker room and that, he grabbed his stuff, said hello to everyone else except for Dwight, and moved the fuck away from him totally. So I think after this event and the one actually on the plane, I just saw footage of it where Dwight grabbed like went on the PA system on the plane, the team plane, and started taking the piss and even saying that, you know, Kobe's like 75 years old kind of thing. So I think they're going to try and dish him off, but they'll want to do it for the right...
They want the right price.
But there's
the rub. I mean,
they're not going to do the whole Adam Morris and Paul Gasol thing on themselves.
What's going to be good enough?
Even with
the lack of chemistry between the Lakers right now, what's going to be good enough for Dwight Howard?
What are they going to get? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's banged up. Yeah. He's an impending free agent, so he can easily walk at the end of the season. What team is going to give away key pieces and draft picks and a solid player and, you know, a solid player and really good draft picks for Dwight Howard at the moment? I mean, when he's healthy and whatnot, you pretty much any team in the league would probably pull a trigger, short of trading someone like LeBron or Kobe, of course. Most teams would pull a trigger on a deal to get Dwight Howard and pair him up with whoever they've got. Well, clearly it doesn't work with every player in the league because he and Kobe haven't gelled. But at the moment, in this context, I mean, for example, I wouldn't want to see the Bulls trade Joakim Noah for him. I mean, any other year, you'd say Noah for Howard. Well, you've probably got to go with Howard as the best center in the league. But Noah's having a decent season. He's fitting in with the Bulls. He's healthy. He's not a. They've got him locked up for a few more years. That sounds bad.
He's not a fucking jackass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some people might disagree. Noah probably does rub some people the wrong way. I like him. Of course, he's a Bull. If he were another team, I might not like him so much. But at the moment, I wouldn't do it. And, I mean, Ben, you're a Heat fan. I don't think you'd trade Bosch. You certainly wouldn't trade Wade or...
No, not at the moment. Ron for him. No.
And
no, definitely
and,
not.
And I don't think we should approach the subject of trading Andre Drummond for
Dwight Howard. What?
We shouldn't even
what?
Blasphemy. Blasphemy. But I mean, so that's the thing. It's what do they get for him? If they do want to trade him, I think they've got to settle for cents on the dollar. Just as they'd have to do if they wanted to ship Gasol out of there. You know, the Lakers are not in a great position. Basically,
you know, it's
three it's three
funny.
Beans or crayons and a chocolate milk or a milk.
It's funny that you mentioned Andre Drummond because we were talking about this. You know, it would, I guess, it would make sense in a way. But again, Drummond is already at Dwight Howard like numbers in his first season.
36, yeah.
Yeah, and he's actually better in his metrics than Dwight Howard. So why would you, you know, give up a player that's going to be as good in a year or two and he has such a high potential? We have no idea what levels Drummond could reach if, you know, let loose and if he gets a bit more stamina going. Because right now, after 25 minutes, he's completely, he has no breath. Yeah. And people are calling for him to actually lose some weight to improve his stamina, and he's not going to be back before the end of March, unfortunately, because of the injury. But, you know, I really wouldn't want to see that, even if Howard is a player that can deliver the talent right now. Such a trade is not going to happen because first Drummond is injured, and by the league rules, he can be traded while injured. And I wouldn't want to see a player that already is so close to reaching Howard numbers and is just 19 be traded for a star. Yeah. No, really don't want to see that. And I'm reading up on SB Nation. I'm reading up on a trade that could happen between the Nets and the Lakers. And the Nets were prime target, you know, a prime prospective target, at least for Howard during the last offseason.
That's where we want to go, yeah. Yeah,
and there is a trade that could happen that includes pretty much every player on the Nets roster that is not Brook Lopez or Deron Williams or Joe Johnson or Gerald Wallace. And the trade that actually works as far as the CBA rules go is Dwight Howard from the Lakers to the Nets for Chris Humphries, Marshon Brooks, Mirza Teletovic, Tyson Taylor, Toko Sengelia, and the rights to Bogdan Bogdanovic and Ilya Karaman. So Lakers get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 5 players and the rights to 2 others from the Nets for Dwight Howard. They get enough cap space in the summer of 2015 to make a run even at LeBron James if they want to, and the Nets get Dwight Howard. And there's actually local reporters saying it's a 50-50 chance that this deal happens. Opinions, guys?
Well, I'm thinking there might be some roster spots on the Nets, so we might be able to try out, guys. we
just,
might be able to
just have to get Jay-Z very drunk and, you know, get him to sign some paperwork.
Yeah, obviously.
And of course, we love his work on NBA 2K13, so Jay-Z.
Absolutely.
Just throwing that out there, you know, if you're looking to replace some players. I mean, it's interesting, I guess. So I'm guessing Kobe's going to be retired by then, so maybe they start fresh with some young players to build around, some draft picks, some cap space. And of course, the lore of being the Lakers and in the huge market that they're in.
Do you think that actually James goes from the Heat to the Lakers in the summer of 15? Even if he has the shoes of Kobe Bryant to fill?
Isn't he going back to the Cavaliers to play with Kyrie Irving? I mean, that seems to be the...
Yeah, and Chris Paul, if we're to trust the NBA 2K13.
I wouldn't be surprised if he remains in Miami, to be honest. I think if it's going to be... If one of them has to leave for cap reasons and luxury tax reasons, it's going to be Wade or Bosh, most likely,
I'd say. I think James feels that the Heat are now his legacy.
Yeah.
You know, that he wants to build... a team, be part of a team that's going to win championship after championship with the Heat.
I don't see him. He's safe with no income taxes as well. Yeah. Florida has no income taxes, so that.
helps, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it helps them recruit free agents, but yeah, I don't know about that one. I'd pick him to stay. Well, then again, I picked him to stay with the Cavaliers, so it shows what I know. But Jalen Rose picked Bosch and LeBron to go to the Knicks, so. You know, apparently I could be an NBA analyst. So once again, if ESPN's hiring, I can throw out weird. We can all throw out terrible predictions, and our all-star predictions show that. So once again, if we want us to take this podcast to ESPN, you know, just say the word. We'll banter on there instead for your money.
Our phone lines are open.
Yeah. We will negotiate. We are open to negotiations.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think he does, and I don't know about that trade. I mean, I've got a feeling he makes it through the deadline as a Laker. I think it's going to get out in flames. I think there's a very good chance they don't make the playoffs the way it's going, but I think they're going to do it as the team they've got now, more or less.
Yeah, and the other rumor regarding Dwight Howard is him going to the Atlanta Hawks. You know. Again, you mentioned Josh Smith, and then Josh Smith is a prime trade target by a lot of teams,
including the Brooklyn Nets.
He must have been the most discussed trade prospect since the start of the season. I'm actually growing tired of hearing about Josh Smith, as a trade target. If it's time to move him, it would be now. And it's curious to see what the Hawks would have to give up. The report I'm seeing doesn't mention, you know, a specific trade rumor, but you know, the Hawks are widely rumored to be making a serious run at Dwight Howard, and they had to, again, along with, you know, just like the Nets trade, they would have to give up a lot.
Yeah. I'm seeing here Mark Stein from ESPN, our future colleague, is reporting potential deals include the Brooklyn Nets in the midst of negotiating a three-way trade, including that would involve Josh Smith, Phoenix Suns, and Milwaukee Bucks, also contenders. And Boston Celtics and Wizards. So, there's a lot of people still vying for his services. So, who knows where he's going to end up. But here's another prediction that I'll throw out there, guys. These are the names that have been talked about, you know, in Josh Smith's case since the beginning of the season, Dwight Howard because of the way it's gone down. I'm going to predict that we're going to see a big trade that nobody saw coming. Just that there's going to be this other big name just gets moved.
On the 11th hour?
At the 11th hour, kind of like Deron Williams a couple of years ago when they traded him to the Nets. I'm guessing there's going to be something that it's all been somehow in this information age has somehow been kept behind closed doors. Maybe, as you say, an 11th hour deal that they pull the trigger on. You know, it looks like Kevin Garnett's not going to move Dwight Howard. Maybe it is 50-50, but I'm still not convinced that that's going to happen. Josh Smith probably going to end up somewhere in one of 10 teams or whatever that's vying for his services. Yeah. But someone else. I think there's going to be someone else. And we know how well I've done with my predictions in the last week. So, you know, let's see how this happens next week. But I can't just...
If there's bets around, you know, the possible trades happening, definitely trust us and put your money into what is it? Dwight Howard to the Warriors... Josh Smith going to the Trailblazers and what else? And I guess Kevin Garnett going to the Pistons. So yeah, that's where my money is.
Yep. Sound advice.
Sound advice. Sound investment advice. That and unicorn meat. You want to invest in unicorn. It's going to blow up.
Yeah.
Literally.
Get it before it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Even if you have to get it used, you know, half-munched. Invest now. The price is only going to go up. That and, you know, that and wooden seats in China.
Get it now before it's gone like the dodo.
Yeah. In Greater China, I guess. What else? Any other trade rumors you guys have heard or read about that you want to mention?
The other name that comes up is Iman Shumpert and JJ Redick. They're currently talking about the Knicks and the Magic swapping them.
Yeah, although
lateral move, I guess.
JJ is apparently wanting to try and lock up a $10 million a year contract and that in their free agency. So that's what I've read today.
That's a bit much for a shooter, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know if you'll get that, but I mean, well, pursue it. I mean, there's a lot of money going around as we've talked about before in the NBA. So you know, points for trying, but yeah, I don't think the Magic are really going to be wanting to do that as they look to rebuild in the wake of getting rid of the aforementioned Dwight Howard, which we can't seem to stop mentioning. So
yeah. In order to stop mentioning Dwight Howard, I have a thought that's been going in my head for quite a while. I'm not that interested in actually the trade deadline so much as I'm interested in where does Chris Paul end up after the following offseason.
Okay. I said before Clippers. I reckon he seems to be, I mean, they're winning, which is a very rare thing to say about the Clippers, but the last couple of years we've actually been able to say it.
And he seems to have that good chemistry with Blake
Griffin. Yeah. But you know, I guess he's the top. He's the top asset of the next free agency pool of the next offseason. You know, but the Clippers are slowly becoming the main Los Angeles team after quite some time. And the Lakers aren't doing much to, you know, to dispute that. They're actually still outside. Lakers are still outside of the 8th seed. They're now 9th in the Western Conference. So, yeah, and I don't know what team would actually have, you know, the assets and the immediate future competitiveness and... you know, tie that all together with the cap space to be able to sign Chris Paul. But you know, the question is out there. If anyone, if you guys listen to the podcast, and I think I'm going to make a thread about this. If you want to give us your opinion on where do you think Chris Paul ends up this offseason, and I think, Iguodala is another. He hasn't resigned with the Nuggets, has he?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think Andre Iguodala is the next biggest prospect of the next FA pool. So it's definitely going to be an interesting offseason. But you know, if anyone has anything to say about where Iguodala and Paul end up after this offseason, which are the main names, and then we have the 14 of season, then the 15 of season where supposedly the Lakers sign LeBron James as we've said, but yeah, we'll see how that goes. If you have any ideas, you guys listen to the podcast, have any ideas about where Chris Paul ends up, feel free to mention them, and we'll mention the most interesting ideas in the next podcast. Any other trade rumors?
Yeah, I think that's about it. There's minor ones. Apparently, Oklahoma City are shopping Eric Mayner. I'm just reading this off an article I pulled up with a bunch of them listed. Yeah, I mean, that's why I think there's going to be one, like a really unexpected trade pop out of nowhere, because we're talking about all these small deals and a few obvious ones with big names that may or may not happen because of no trade clauses or... not being able to have the assets to pull the deal off. So that's why I'm predicting just something ridiculous comes out of the woodwork involving a big name.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it's kind of quiet, actually. I mean, usually there's a bit more buzz, but the buzz has been surrounding players who may just as well be staying put, apart from Josh Smith, apparently. who's going everywhere this
deadline.
Yeah. He's just going to be dissected into pieces and sent piece by piece to different teams for different bits of money. Well,
there's a little Josh Smith in all of us, apparently.
Yeah. I like to think that Josh Smith is good. Josh Smith's good arm is, you know, is getting all the money. So
yeah,
but
and
you know,
and his right leg because he's left-handed. So yeah.
Yeah,
so the jumping
a trade that actually never happened, but was never a rumor as well, and just showed up this week because of the longtime Lakers owner Jerry Buss passing away. It was that in 2007, apparently the front office of the Lakers had agreed with the Pistons for a trade that would get Kobe Bryant to the Pistons in exchange for Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, Amir Johnson, and a first-round pick. And that doesn't make any sense right now, but in 2007, it did make a lot of sense because Hamilton and Prince were still performing really well. But the only thing that stopped the trade was the no trade clause in Bryant's contract that gave him the final word over the trade, and he vetoed it. But apparently, both front offices were really looking forward to the trade, which would have completely turned the tables, I guess. Now, nobody can imagine. Me as a Pistons fan, I can't imagine, you know, having Kobe Bryant in the team. And most Pistons bloggers were equally flabbergasted by the prospect of Kobe Bryant in the red, white, and blue, and you know, Hamilton and Prince being in Lakers jerseys.
Yeah.
Especially considering some of the fights that had occurred over the past years during the prime of the Pistons and Lakers. You know, during those Pistons championship years. You know, trading two teams that were such rivals, trading their centerpieces. No, that doesn't really happen a lot.
No, not at all. And only 3 years ago, clashing in the finals in 2004.
So that, it came out of left field for everyone. You know, it's not a rumor. It's a trade that could have happened had Kobe Bryant approved it, so I guess, but we'll never know what could have happened. But, you know, I'm still saying that it's the most interesting thing about this is that we have two really big rivals just trading their centerpieces. It doesn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah.
Why would the Lakers give up Kobe Bryant for Hamilton and Prince?
Well, at the time...
Was this the time where Kobe was demanding the trade?
It was 2007. That was the they'd just come off the disappointing year. They'd lost in the first round of the Suns after giving up the 3-1 series lead. He was demanding a trade. People were saying, asking him, you know, are you demanding a trade? And he was saying, yes, I am. And so clearly he wanted out. And that was the same season they got Gasol. And of course, that all turned things around for Kobe as far as wanting to be a Laker. But you know, but apparently,
given that.
Apparently didn't want to be a Piston, though, apparently.
Given that, I guess that the front office just went to Bryant and said, okay, you want to be traded? Here you go. You're getting traded to the Pistons. That's your only choice. So, you know, that's the best way to get Kobe Bryant to stay put to, you know, at the Lakers. Propose a Pistons trade to him. And I can't imagine the Pistons fans ever accepting Kobe Bryant in their ranks, and even more so the Lakers fans accepting Rip Hamilton and Tayshaun Prince in their ranks. You know, it would just make an implosion. The whole league would implode after such a trade. But
it depends who wins. I mean, winning has a way of smoothing everything over. I mean,
I'm just saying, you know, initially. Yeah. You know, you don't see rivals exchanging teams, and the fans wouldn't take lightly to that. As much as Kobe Bryant is a big star, I guess, can I go ahead and say was? He at least back then he was a big star, and he was near his prime, a big prospect, and anyone, any any single team would be excited to have him. Yeah. But, you know, you tend to hate the rival team's players if you went up against them for a championship. You don't want to see, you know, your centerpiece is being traded for a rival's team centerpiece. That's just what makes no sense to me. And what, you know, I didn't know that that was the year in 2007 that was that Kobe was requesting a trade. But you know, given that, I guess that was the way the Lakers front office, you know, persuaded Bryant to just stay with the Lakers. You know, your only trading choice is getting traded to the Pistons. So yeah, take that if you want.
Yeah,
good no, way
you
to discuss.
You couldn't imagine Larry Bird being traded for Magic Johnson back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. You don't expect, you know, two teams trade their biggest stars when they're rivals. It doesn't make sense at all. The only way it makes sense is, you know, if Brian was causing so much trouble in that the Lakers, my front office felt that they would be better off fulfilling his demand. But the way it worked out, I guess, is the most logical way. And I guess Kobe Bryant did retract his trade demands.
Yeah.
After all. So, yeah, it all worked out for the best, I guess. Not for the Pistons' best. Really, I guess they could have done much better with Kobe Bryant rather than how the team turned out after, you know, 2007 was right on the bank of the deadline, of the decline, of the Pistons.
You're saying you'd rather have Kobe than Charlie Villanueva? I mean, blasphemy.
Okay.
I just brought up another article with some trade rumors. Apparently, several teams are inquiring about Wizards guard Jordan Crawford, who is better than Michael Jordan, according to Jordan Crawford. So, I mean, decent scorer there. I can see, imagine a few teams will be certainly making inquiries. So there's another, not superstar, but another significant player, I guess, who could be on the bubble. Spurs looking to trade DeJuan Blair for anyone. He doesn't want to re-sign and has been asking for a trade. I guess they're going to grant that request since he's sort of not in their plans.
I would hazard the guess that the Warriors have the cap space to accommodate Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, yeah.
Jordan Crawford and the rest of the team, you know, six or seven players, exactly like the Nets trade, just to make up for Dwight Howard's contract and, you know, and the Lakers' demand. So Warriors would have to give up Jordan Crawford and half the team to get Dwight Howard.
Yeah. Here's another one. Speaking of impending free agents, Andrew Bynum. Reckons that he will play for the 76ers and not just his local bowling team. Remember the pin pals, Andrew Bynum. So apparently he is saying that he will be back this season. It's certainly getting very late in the season, but apparently is still aiming to do it. And, of course, there's a question of what to do with him in the offseason because, again, you've got a very talented player, but he's even more banged up than Dwight Howard, having not even been able to spend a minute on the court this year and has pretty much gone down with injury every year of his career for the last, you know, at least 3 or 4 years, I believe. Yeah. I think 2010 he made it through to the end. But, the talent's there with the guy, but the attitude, of course, has been a question mark at times. But the big one is his health. I mean, he's obviously going to be after a big contract. I don't see him getting it because who really wants to...
Already been paid $17 million.
But yeah, does he get another big contract? Does anyone see him as a franchise player? I mean,
No.
I think the Sixers are bidding against themselves, really. And
he's only had 3 seasons where he's played 60 games or more,
Yeah.
He's had a 46-game season his first year in the NBA. Then he played only 82 games in 06-07. Then 35 games in 07-08, 50 games in 08-09, 65 games in 09-10, 54 games in 10-11, and 60 games in 11-12. So I wouldn't see anyone giving him $17 million
next
year. No, considering he hasn't played one game this season.
I think Redick's got more chance of getting that $10 million.
Yeah. You would imagine.
But do you think the Sixers will look to re-sign him? Again, as I said, they're probably going to be bidding against themselves, so they're not really going to have to worry about going up to that $20 million, the $15-20 million to try and retain him.
I don't know. It only depends on what other choices they get out of the free agency in the offseason. You know, $17 million is a good contract to get rid of, to get a couple of players that could fill Andrew Bynum's non-existent shoes right now.
Dwight Howard? do they swap teams again?
I don't know.
But Bynum did state that Kobe Bryant stunted his growth as a Laker.
If he played enough games to actually grow, maybe. But right now, I don't see that. I don't see that. You know, it's not Dwight Howard's fault that you got injured every year.
Yeah. Kobe did get Bynum a couple of rings as well. wasn't complaining when he was dancing and drinking of the champagne after a couple of championships in 2009-2010. So,
and how exactly did Howard impede Bynum's growth?
Kobe impeded Bryant's.
Kobe impeded Bynum's growth. Yeah. By how? Because he did have the minutes. Bynum played since he played 22 minutes a game his second season and has played over 28 minutes a game ever since.
I'm guessing
the amount of touches of the ball. Yeah. I think that's why it sort of got to his head a little bit late last season, where he was starting to put up threes and trying to steal the ball off teammates and things like that. I think the fact that Boss wasn't going to trade him either,
I
have the perfect headline for his free agency campaign and meeting with teams and whatnot. Bowling for dollars. That's what we're going to call Andrew Bynum's free agency this upcoming season. He's going to be bowling for dollars.
Yeah, you know. I like that. I'm looking at the upcoming free agents of 2013, and you know, there's no. I'm looking for big for you know maybe players that could play proper center to fill to you know give some give 76ers you know some options, and $17 million is can get you not one but two players. I mean, the only players that are getting close to $17 million are Dwight Howard, Al Jefferson, who's a Jazz right now, but he might be, you know, trying to test the free agency this upcoming offseason. So, what do you think about Al Jefferson? And I don't see Spurs giving up on Thiago Splitter the way he's turned out to be. And I don't think, you know, Samuel Dallenberg is as good a choice, but Jefferson could be a good pick for the 76ers to fill, you know, Andrew Bynum's non-existent shoes if they're Jazz. And he doesn't, I don't think he's a restricted free agent, so...
No, he's not.
Yeah, so what do you think about Jefferson?
Well, if I'm the Jazz, I'm definitely trying to keep him. I know there's salary cap issues keeping him and Millsap, but I like that that combination up front of Jefferson and Millsap.
Yeah.
So if I'm Utah, I definitely want to. I'm not want to give up on that anytime soon. But yeah, if he is available and can be pried away, a team like the Sixers who might be wanting to shy away from buying him. I don't know that Jefferson is necessarily a franchise guy. You know, there's still questions that is it his team? Is it Millsap's team? You know, what exactly is happening there, but he's certainly a very good, legitimate big man in the league. The player that the Celtics actually traded away to get Kevin Garnett all those years ago, actually. So whatever that's worth. And yeah. I remember at the time, people were saying, you know, they're trading away this future of Al Jefferson and Ricky Davis, I guess, perhaps not, but trading away the future in Al Jefferson for a short term run with Garnett, Allen, and Pierce, and that worked out pretty well for the Celtics. Obviously, Minnesota didn't get much out of Jefferson. I think was he injured for a couple of years there, or in any case, he's ended up in Utah. And yeah, again, if I'm the Jazz, I want to keep a hold of him. But
yeah, Millsap is also an upcoming free agent. It is going to be a big target.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, he's also a free agent, so Jazz have, you know, their work cut out for them. They'll have to, you know, somehow master the money to keep Millsap and Jefferson, because both are on expiring contracts, and both are going to be Millsap even more so than Jefferson, because Millsap is on an $8.5 million contract, while Jefferson is on a $15 million contract. Millsap is going to be a big target, so it's going to be a question of who the Jazz can they keep both players. Who do they decide to keep? And you know, teams are going to be able to make some very enticing offer for both. So Jazz are fine, you know, have found themselves in quite a pickle. They could lose a lot of their talent in the upcoming offseason if they don't play their cards right. But you know, if it comes down to that, the 76ers can trust the expiring contract of Darko Milicic to fill in the shoes. So there's always Darko when you need him.
To warm that bench up.
NBA
champion Darko Milicic.
Just
like NBA champion Eddie Curry, you know.
Yeah. He has as many championships as LeBron James, so that's all you need to know. That's pretty much all you need to know.
And Antoine Walker.
Talking about the Jazz and free agents, even Mo Williams is an upcoming free agent. Can't the Jazz resign anyone? Randy Foy is an upcoming free agent. Is everyone on the Jazz on an expiring contract right now?
Yeah, I guess they're looking to really change.
I hadn't noticed that. The Jazz could completely lose their whole team during this offseason.
Could they maybe wanting to make a play for LeBron James in the free agency?
Yeah. Give up Mo Williams, give up Jefferson, Millsap, and just grab LeBron James and be done with it. LeBron James and Dwight Howard.
That'll be Kobe's ideal situation right there, just a team by himself. He'll love that.
there's still Steve Nash on the team. Don't forget about Steve Nash.
True. Although, I know Kobe could demand that trade. You know, send me to the Jazz. I'll play for myself. You can keep Dwight and I'll just move on.
Yeah. As bad as the Lakers go on to be, from now on, I don't see Kobe Bryant quitting and going, you know, I think that he'll try to have a couple of good few seasons, although I don't know how the Lakers could help him with that, but, you know, just like Garnett, even though the team is on a low, you want to quit on a high. You want to resign on the high, so you don't want to embarrass yourself by trying new things. By trying to be taught new tricks as an old dog, and you know, just failing completely. So Kobe Bryant is still putting up decent numbers, even though the Lakers are doing terribly. And he could, if he wanted to resign, he could resign on a high right now. Yep. Nobody would say that Bryant, who was terrible in the last couple of years of his career, if he resigned this or next year,
he wasn't a senile old bastard.
Losing
it on the court.
Yeah, exactly.
At times, terribly selfish, but not terrible.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly the way I would put it. You know, when it comes down to Kobe Bryant. But yeah. Anyway, that's a lot of prospects. You know, in the trade market, and an even more interesting off season. So a lot of things to be interested about, and a lot of teams that could completely blow up sooner than later.
Yeah, and even in the short term, going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, in a couple of days' time, whether there is going to be that flurry of movement, despite there only being sort of minor rumblings around a few players and a few major players and some other minor ones.
Yeah, and we'll have, I guess we'll have either, you know, a lot of stuff to talk about next week or nothing. Either no trade happens, or if your prediction is good, we'll have some big move to talk about.
It could be episode 14 all over again.
No. Maybe, you know, the Nets end up with 8 players next week and, you know, have only 3 players on the bench because they've traded the whole team to the Lakers for Dwight Howard. So that would definitely be interesting. You know, they're signing D-League players, you know, half the D-League team, whatever team is tied to the Brooklyn Nets.
Or if we're on ESPN announcing our decision to go to Brooklyn to fill some of those spots that they're desperate to fill, you know.
Michael Jordan could prove that he can still play even in his 50s. The return of Ben Wallace, Brian Scalabrine, Allen Iverson could finally get a spot. Royce White gets a call-up from the D-League to be
T-Mac
with the
could
Nets.
Make a return from China.
T-Mac makes a return. Larry Bird decides to go up against Michael Jordan, so he joins the Warriors. You know, a lot of stuff could happen in the next week, definitely.
Latrell Sprewell decides he needs to feed the kids, so he decides to make a comeback.
The next deadline is it the re-signing deadline or is it a completely, you know, contract signing deadline? Can teams sign free agents after the deadline? At the end of February.
Yeah, they can sign players. There is a cutoff for players being released by other teams to be eligible for the playoffs, although I don't know if they've waived that this year with the new with the new CBA, now that they're not doing the lock to the 13 or 12 or 13 man playoff rosters that they used to. So I'm not sure if they still have that eligibility. But I know in the past, I think it's could be March 1st or the first week of March. So if they're not released by then, they're not eligible for the playoffs. Don't know if that's still in effect. Could probably look that up. But apart from that, yeah, if they sign someone, a free agent on the last day of the season, yeah, they can do that. They just can't trade after the deadline. That's all that is.
Yeah. About things to get excited, can I go completely outside the NBA?
Yeah.
Things to get excited about. Trials Evolution is coming to the PC, to go on a completely unrelated matter. It's coming for... it's one of the most fun games. You know, Trials began as a flash PC game, I think, and it had, you know, a couple of versions on the PC, then went console exclusive with Trials HD and Trials Evolution, but Red Lynx has decided to go back to its roots and is releasing March 22 Trials Evolution Gold Edition, which from my understanding includes both Trials HD and Trials Evolution, and there's a lot of nice stuff to get if you pre-order. Right now, there's the retail pre-order app, there's the Uplay pre-order app, and soon, supposedly, there will be the Steam pre-order app as well, which allows you to have a nice try at the beta of the game during late February to March 14. I think it's February 28th to March 14, which will, you know, if you pre-order now, you get access to the beta, which begins in a week, and then you'll have only a week to wait without access to the game before the actual game gets released. There's also a lot of nice stuff to go with. And, you know, you're getting so much content for just $20. And the Trials Evolution includes also a track editor, so, you know, those that have tried it on the 360 already know about it, but if you don't know about it, you know, you get $20, but just like, you know, how the NBA 2K is on the PC, you pay $20, but then the whole community gives you so much replayability. And Trials Evolution has such a great has such a great community creating tracks for it. So you just pay $20 and you get the PC version, you get two games, you get the community content, you get the ability to create your own community content. It has four players, multiplayer, local multiplayer, which is, you know, a really rare thing in games. In modern games, you know, local multiplayer sports games tend to have that, but you know, it will have the same four player local multiplayer. It will have online multiplayer, all the good stuff. So it's a great buy at just $20 or €20 if you're in Europe. So yeah, that's my recommendation. That's a sound, you know, shopping advice, shopping recommendation right now. From me, any games you guys are excited about? I know Crysis 3 was released on the consoles. I know today is definitely a day to be excited about if you're a console junkie. I know, Ben, you wanted to have some time to talk about it in the last few podcasts, and we have always been skipping it. But today is the day Sony announces, announces plans about. Yeah, announces plans about the next console, and, you know, 99.9% it's PlayStation 4, you know, news. It's not PS Vita 3 or something. the rumors I've read, but I guess you'll have a lot more to say about it, is that it's coming November 2013. It will have two versions, but, you know, I guess, you know, a lot more. Go ahead and talk about it. Today is a big day for, you know, PlayStation fans.
Yeah. Definitely excited for this press conference. Sony had one actually just after the All-Star game, a few hours after, in Japan. It was actually about the PS Vita. And, it was mainly announcing some games, mainly JRPGs and stuff like that, which are huge in Japan. And then also, it was a 20% price drop in it in Japan, and that for the PS Vita. So hopefully we'll hear some information about the Vita being a price drop in the Western countries and Europe as well. So that'll be good to hear. But definitely interested to see what Sony are going to bring for the... Well, 4 is regarded as an unlucky number in Japan, so whether it holds the sort of continuality between 1, 2, and 3, or if it goes on to another name, like its code name, Orbis, who knows. There is a lot of rumors coming out. It's saying, because Sony purchased Gaikai last year, that it'll be able to stream PS3 games.
I've heard that rumor as well.
A new controller was leaked where it's actually to have like a touch pad, like the back of the Vita, where you can have like the touch controls and all that, which is pretty cool. And it's got like what looks to be like a blue sensor light, like it could be on like the PlayStation Move. And also appears to have like a headphone jack underneath it. What else is there? There's apparently...
Just like the Xbox 360 controllers had?
I think so. The only thing I've got remotely like that is that Razer one that I have for PC.
And I saw in the supposed PlayStation 4 controller, I saw Sony's finally going with the... I'm not sure the word... The sticks are now, you know,
concave.
They're concave instead of convex, which was the PlayStation 2 or PlayStation 1, and it was about time. You know, people are going to see it blatant copying of the Xbox 360 control of the Xbox controller, but you know, it's about time. It's about time. I can appreciate PlayStation Sony finally moving to that, because I was really pissed off whenever I was using such a controller, because the sticks were practically, you know, they would slip out of your fingers constantly. Well, the Xbox controller always offered, you know, much more accurate control, because your finger would be, you know, nicely... nicely covered around by the edges of the stick, so it wouldn't slip out.
It kept it in place, yeah.
Yeah, it kept it in place. It kept your thumb in place instead of you having to slide your thumb over the convex surface of the stick. So that's a good move forward.
Well, but, the whole stealing thing. A good idea is a good idea. I mean, yeah, if it's a good idea that should be the standard, who cares who came up with it first? I mean, if it's like, well, exactly. Congratulations for adopting a good idea. You know,
it's like the whole Apple. Samsung thing, like with Apple saying they basically copied the iPhone. They copied a fucking rectangle with a rounded edge. Yeah. So yeah, it's stupid shit like that. The only thing I really do hope that it does have the ability to control the tension in the analog sticks. So again, like I think we discussed it in one of the earlier podcasts, the stuff that I feature on.
Yeah, variable tension on the sticks and the triggers is going to be a great move.
Yeah.
You know, if a company manages to do that and still not have the controller pre $200, it's going to be a great move. You know, especially, you know, considering how if you're playing, for example, if you're playing an NBA game, you want to have the sticks be free-flowing because you want to have, you know, the immediate control that a good player would have. But, you know, consider the example of suddenly passing the ball to a center that doesn't have a good handle and feeling the sticks harden, you know, be harder to move because the player doesn't have the same agility as a point guard has.
Yeah.
You know, that would be an amazing feature.
The whole free-flowing body like of a point guard, you know, where they have that quickness, then you're able to get that snappy movement as opposed to someone that's like a 350-pound Shaq.
Yeah, exactly that, and you know, or the more concise control you could have with racing games. I've always been, you know, pissed off at how soft the triggers are and how easy the sticks are to move, because in racing games that demand accuracy, it makes them practically unplayable unless you have a wheel and pedals, you know. Yep. But if you could adjust how hard the sticks and the tension on the sticks and the triggers, you would have that additional precision when the game required them. And they could simulate, you know, the handling of different cars and, you know, how hard their pedals are, or, you know, the cars with electric motors in the wheel would have soft sticks, while cars with mechanical wheels would have harder tension. There's a lot of possibilities there if they end up doing that.
And there's almost... And with first-person and third-person sort of shooting games and stuff like that, you know, you want more of that tighter control for, you know, more accurate aim with the gun and that. But say if you have like a knife or a machete or freehand fighting, you know, you might want that looser control and that, so you can get in the faster sort of punch and that, or the swipe with the blade and that. So, yeah, it can definitely work in a few different games within that.
Yeah. And even before that, you know, and even if you center around PC gaming, you could have, and I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet, you could have analog keyboards, you know, keys with variable points of pressure. So I could, you know, it would allow for better scrolling, you know, if the arrows had variable points of pressure, you could have, you know, pressing a bit on the up key would move a line at a time, while pressing harder would move pages at a time, or, you know, having the analog control that's missing from the keyboard compared to a controller, so you could actually have the keyboard be a viable choice for games that require analog control. And it's one of the things that, you know, have fascinated me as a possibility, and it just hasn't happened. You know, but because maybe there isn't the market for them, you know. But I would have to guess it would be an easy thing to do if you can have analog controllers, and the next move for controllers is variable tension on the moving parts. You know, the next step for keyboards would be analog keys. But yeah, and you know, besides all the good rumors about the consoles, there's also bad rumors about them, especially, you know, regarding the whole thing about used games and how, you know, retail bought games would be tied to your account so you couldn't resell them and stuff like that.
And you could install them on other consoles, like, even if you replace it. So yeah,
I was hearing that mostly about the next Xbox console, but now I'm hearing about the PlayStation 2, and it's really disappointing to see the companies move that way. And I was making a point, I don't remember when or where, but I was making a point that people were disappointing about Microsoft going that way and saying, oh, I'm not going to buy the Xbox if it's that way. And the comment I made was, all it takes is for Sony to do the same. And then you can't fucking boycott the next generation completely. You know, all it takes is for a cartel to be made, a common decision to be made by Microsoft and Sony to both disallow used games, and you're still going to buy the console. You're still going to have to pick between them. If just one company did it, if just Microsoft did it, I would see that as a fair point to Sony's advantage, but they wouldn't do it if they weren't sure that the competitor would do it as well. It's such a controversial move that only makes sense in a cartel.
I remember a few years ago, like when DVD players and that were just coming out, you know, Sony would refuse to have the ability to play MPEGs and DivX and all that stuff and other media formats and that, mainly just to try and protect, obviously, with their Sony studios, with the music and...
They had a lot of money.
But it wasn't until like Philips and all that stuff really were pumping out all these DVD players, and they were selling really well with the ability to play JPEG video, like DivX and all that stuff, aside from the standard DVD formats and all that. So I think Sony will be a bit stubborn if they do that kind of thing again. It will hurt them in that aspect, but the whole next gen. I'm surprised Sony are going first. Possibly going first. It's not 100% guaranteed that it is going to be the PS4, but with all their stuff that sort of going dating back from last year, you know, after E3, you know, they're saying, you know, it's not about being first, it's about being the cheapest, it's about being the best, and so.
Wasn't PlayStation 3 late compared to Xbox 360, though?
Didn't that hurt? Yeah, it came out a year later.
That definitely hurt Sony.
I don't mind if it's going to be out 3 months, even maybe 6 months later, depending on.
Do you think that Sony just did that, you know, because they felt like they lost a lot of potential customers by being a year late, so now they're trying to make up for that by catching,
possibly,
you know...
Very likely. I think it's more their current financial status. Everyone knows they're not doing too well financially at the moment. Obviously, with the whole TV market and that, Samsung are really dominating with that, even though... there's apparently a bit of a share between them and that. And, you know, they got partnerships with Samsung. But I think with the other electronics and all that stuff at the moment, Samsung are really destroying them at the moment. So I think that's really hurt them. And so it's like, get it out there first. Does have some benefit, though, because I think the guys on Game Trailers, like... with the bonus round and that mentioned, you know, any games that they preview first, from third party and all that stuff, is going to make it sort of seem like an exclusive at first. So when the next Xbox Durango comes out, or the Loop, or 720, whatever they want to call it, you know, it's going to seem like, I can already get it on the PS4, whatever it's going to be called, you know, so it's sort of like, well, they're copying sort of thing. So it could be a mental game in that. I'm interested to see what they do. I really hope that they bring something to the table, and something that's specs-wise is going to be fantastic, a little bit, possibly even a tad bit better than what we've seen for the software development kits and all that, that have been leaked, all the information on that. So... if they want this device to last, the 10 years that they try and get it to do, then they're going to have to ante it up. And, you know, you take into account, too, with NVIDIA's Titan graphics card, you know, the 6-gig graphic card that they just announced and all that, it's like $1,000 US to buy. You know, I don't expect it to be in the next-gen consoles, but you'd want something that could have the sustainability of in, well, could potentially go up to 6-gig kind of thing, you know. So, yeah, you want something that lasts. So you don't want something that's mid-market now. You want and there's no real point if it's only going to last 4 years, 5 years. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what it does, what next-gen is, though, where it's going to take us. So
we'll see. We'll have a lot of more answers, you know. Today, it's the live conference is, I think, 6 p.m. Eastern, if I'm not mistaken. So
when we're recording it now, it's just under 8.5 hours away.
We'll have a lot more answers and a lot less questions, you know, in the next podcast, and a lot more to discuss about on that front. But we've been running a little long, so I think it's about time to wrap up, if you don't mind, guys.
Two quick things. I swear they won't take long. One is sort of something that sort of bugged me when the whole NBA Elite situation come out, you know, the whole Jesus pose from half court. I don't know if people were aware, like, when the animators and that and mocapture people do their recordings, they actually have the people stand in a T pose to start and end a scene. So it wasn't a flaw in someone trying to replicate the Jesus on the cross. It was actually the character, the bug floor, where they were just going back into the actual pose that each actor does before and after they finish a mo-capture scene.
It is much, yeah.
And, you know, it was a demo still, so I was kind of disappointed in the whole thing. Like, I played the demo a lot when it came out. I didn't experience that glitch at all. On a personal level, so it didn't worry me too much. And the fact is, it was the key word, it was a demo, so they still had an opportunity to sort of fix it. And I remember that when 2K came out, and I think it was in the actual official game, not the demo, it actually had clones of each player, so they basically had 10... each player had 10 players on each team in that on the court at the one time. You know, that didn't cop as much criticism as the whole crucifixion thing that people scorned Elite for. So I'm disappointed in that. That was,
I mean, I agree. Know, I wanted to
get that off my chest. I wanted to get that off my chest, so yeah.
I think a lot of it is the fact that 2K had really started to gain steam and really succeed as a sim, whereas NBA Live had the rough years, so any kind of criticism that could be thrown its way, it was going to attract. I mean, I agree. I never experienced that either, but clearly people did because the videos are there. But I think there were other issues with Elite, regardless.
What the problem? What the problem is? The main problem is when you don't release a game, there's not enough positive things to say to cover the noise of all the criticisms.
Exactly.
2K actually had a game that was good. That with all its bugs and faults that 2K has us used to, it has its good parts that everyone can enjoy. But when you don't get a game out, all that's going to remain after people have had their time with the demo, so they're done posting anything positive about it, is the criticisms.
Yeah.
You know? That's what stays
failure,
with you.
The overall failure of the game to launch.
So it all makes sense, and it's up to EA to redeem itself, you know, by getting something good out whenever that is. If it's a next gen game, if it's a current gen game, if it's Live 14, if it's Live 14 and a half, Live 15, whatever it is, EA needs to get back, and it needs to get back strong, so that you know the positive things can cover the noise and can make everyone forget about the past failures. No.
Okay. Yeah. You know.
And on that note, let's slowly wrap up.
Yep. So that's gonna do it. for this week's podcast. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and listening to us ramble about, what do we cover today, guys? Movies, basketball, video games, patches, the modding community, the NBA All-Star Weekend, trade rumors. We touched on it all this week. As always, keep it locked, NBA-live.com. Follow us on Twitter, at the NLSC. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. Check out our forums for the latest discussion. Leave us your comments on this podcast, of course, and join in all the discussion threads that are going on. Have your say. We promise we won't ban you unless you say something we really disagree with. No. we generally are pretty good about that, as long as you're not being a complete jerk to everyone in the forum. So join in the discussion. Always great talking with basketball and basketball video games with you guys. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining me, guys. I'm Andrew.
I'm Leftos.
And I'm Ben, and I'm staying with the 18-year-old tonight. And yeah, I'm working this 18.
Okay. Lots to look forward to for next time.
That's right.
lots to look forward to for next time. The announcement of PlayStation 4, hopefully, and the trade rumors will no longer be rumors, but will be moves and moves that weren't made. So stay tuned, and we'll see you next week.
And we also still have that surprise that we mentioned last week. Still trying to work out a few details, but definitely stay tuned for that in upcoming episodes. But
big things are coming to copy the NBA.
Where amazing happens right here on the NLSC podcast.
Yep. And it's not those big Christmas Day jerseys, we assure you.
Yeah, definitely not.
Not just the NLSC Christmas Day jerseys. Those will be coming as well, and the sleeves.
Yeah, we should start our own merchandise.
I do have my own sportswear label. I do actually have a couple of designs up for the NLSC. I worked on that a few months ago.
Let us finish the conclude the podcast by saying, give us your money.
Definitely. That's some sound investment advice.
We'll take your money now.
Yeah, definitely.
Bet on us and our suggestions. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's wrap this baby up. So once again, I've been Andrew.
I've been Leftos.
And I'm Arcane.
Okay.
See you next week, guys.
Bye-bye.